It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo,
South America,
Australia,
France,
Germany,
UK,
Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go, off and running on this third day of December 2020. This is The Horn. HeadOn.live is where you find us live on the interweb tubes, by the way. That's where, among other things, we keep the we keep the chat room. Yes. And if you'd like to be part of the merry, wacky, zany, real-time multimedia extravaganza that takes place during the 3 hours in which this program is live, Monday through Friday, 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. Well, pop on by. And early arrivers are Roger in Oregon and Squeaky will be happy to greet you, and we will be capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator, Sparky, who, of course, being a third stage guild navigator, has folded space to become Man Cave on what appears to be a magnificent 67-degree Northern California day. I guess winter's already over there. I don't know. A little less magnificent here in the hills and hollers of almost level West by Cold Trump Virginia, Stan. Yeah, I've managed by firing up the propane to get it up to 60 degrees in here, which is actually kind of comfortable when you get right down to it. It's I think we got around 50 outside, so it's not as hateful as it was. God damn, it was cold last night. I woke up wondering where my feet done went. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But every program here at The Horn begins with gratitude. This program is no different. And it is for that reason that we begin the program by thanking our PayPal subscribers for the third day of the month. That means thanks going out to David and to Stephen and to John and to Faith and, Faith and Andrew. Thank you to Mick, and thank you to Bill in Allentown. Thank you to Janice. Thank you to Gene and Ann across the pond. Thank you all so very kindly for being partial sponsors of the program and helping to keep live, independent, progressive, liberal broadcasting afloat for, these many years. 17 or more, actually. So that's probably 18 or more. Anyway. That's where things are, and that's how we keep the program going. As for the evening's fundraising goal, well, it's at 5:35. So hopefully, we'll knock out a little bit of that, or it'd be great to knock it all out so we don't have to do another Friday on the front porch community-made miracle tomorrow. Those things can get a little nerve-wracking, but that's where we are, 5:35, and there is bill paying going on at the front of the month. There's bill paying at the middle of the month. There's bill paying at the end of the month. There's always bills to keep all this shit going. Right. So, with that having been said, it is Thorn in the Side Thursday, and we've got some thorns. We interrupt this program for a special message from the White House.
Come on down to Dickhead Donnie's drilling den. I'm absolutely happy for hydrocarbons. Yes, I am. We got big deals going on down here at Dickhead Donnie's drilling den. Come on by. We've got leases in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge to get rid of, and they're going for cheap. Yes, indeed, we got drilling leases in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, and all you gotta do is just grab them by the positrusy, and they're yours for a song. Yes, indeed, right here at Dickhead Donnie's Drilling Den, we're gonna end all of these 4 years of MAGA madness with a big blowout sale. And you know what? Thanks to what I've done to the Environmental Protection Agency, if one of your wells blows out in the Arctic National Refuge, well, nobody will be paying any attention anyway. That's right. Come on down. Dickhead Donnie's Drilling Den. Big sale going on. Leases in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. We got 19 million acres of drilling leases to get rid of, and we're going to get rid of it before any of those environmental wackos can get in and start trying to protect and holler about the poor little goddamn caribouses and the reindeers. Yeah, fuck the reindeers, too. I asked my lovely wife, Melanoma, if she liked the reindeers, and she said, "Fuck Christmas. Who love Christmas? Nobody give a shit about Christmas. Fuck Christmas." So that's what we're doing. We're fucking Christmas right down here at Dickhead Donnie's Drilling Den. We've got oil leases for cheap.
Yeah, I wish I was kidding. But when it comes to thorns in the side, here we are. Yep. The White House has announced plans to... Did I do the "Hi, I'm Bob" part? Because I am Bob. Not high, just Bob. No, the 19 million acres of the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, drilling there and fucking it up righteously, or unrighteously, has been a fetish object for the Republican Party since long before Dickhead Donnie's Drilling Den decided to get their hands on, or try to get their hands on the White House. I mean, this guy, you know, remember, and hasn't he just been silent during all of this? Why so, you know, it seems like there were so many old guard Republicans, you know, the Lincoln Project Republicans and whatnot, and they did everything they could to try to stop Nitwit Nero. But George W. Bush was as quiet as a graven image. Yeah. Wonder why. Maybe it's because so many of the things that they're doing there at Dickhead Donnie's Drilling Den are right in line with the Republican priorities of compassionate conservatism and all the evil crap that was perpetrated back there during the reign of error of Dim Leader. Mm-hmm. There are even some Republicans who oppose the idea of drilling in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. 19 million acres, pristine Arctic coastline. Hell, a couple of more years of climate change and it'll be beachfront property, and Dickhead Donnie's Drilling Den will be trying to build a tacky-ass hotel there.
Yeah, come on by. It's warm as toast.
So next week... The hell... noises. That can't have been Sam the studio serpent. No, I just can't. It's too cold. But no, really. Next week, the Bureau of Land Management, BLM. Somebody tell dipshit Donnie that BLM has gotten into the federal government.
What?
Next week, the Bureau of Land Management is going to enter a notice about the lease sale in the Federal Register. No, really. Now, the question is, who's going to do the drilling? Who's going to finance the drilling? Because Bank of America has said they won't finance drilling projects in the Arctic. and J.P. Morgan Chase and Citigroup and Goldman Sachs and Morgan Stanley and Wells Fargo have all declared they have no interest in financing that. And that means that there was a little bit of maggotry that took place over in the office of the comptroller of the currency. Trying to strong arm, you know, free markets are only fun if they're doing Republican things. So the office of the comptroller of the currency, a month or so ago, put forward a rule that they want to impose, saying that financial institutions like the aforementioned Bank of America, J.P. Morgan Chase, Citigroup, Goldman Sachs, and Morgan Stanley and Wells Fargo, that they can't refuse to lend to, say, species killing, and I mean the human species, industries. According to the maggot comptroller of the currency, this will promote
fair access.
Imagine that. There I was all those years listening to Flush Flimball tell us about, my friends, the free market is the bedrock upon which our country resides. It is the foundation of our economy and our political system. Without the free market, it's nothing but communism all the way down, my friends. Hand me another handful of those Oxycontins. Mm-hmm. But now, the banks aren't free to say no to financing climate change. Now, this proposed rule over at the comptroller of the currency, this fair access rule, has potential to have impacts beyond oil.
Yeah, come on down, Dickhead Donnie's drilling den. It doesn't just have to be oil. You can frack for gas if you think you can do it up there. You can do anything you want. You know, when you're a celebrity oil company, you just do it. You got to have some Tic Tacs around and maybe some boom for your oil spills. Have you ever grabbed a reindeer by the? I have.
But if banks can't refuse to lend for hydrocarbon projects, that would mean that, well, it would just force Bank of America and J.P. Morgan Chase and Citigroup and Goldman Sachs and Morgan Stanley and Wells Fargo to lend when some ne'er-do-well coal company came along and said, "Well, gosh, guys, we sure would like to blow the living shit out of some more Appalachia." There's a reason I'm doing that with my Make West Virginia Great Big Old Governor Jim Justice voice, because he's still got a shitload of coal operations. And so I can easily see him at Bank of America or J.P. Morgan Chase or Citigroup or Goldman Sachs, Morgan Stanley or Wells Fargo. "I sure would like, I'm West Virginia's only billionaire, and we might have us a pandemic going on, but gosh darn it, I don't spend my own money on this stuff. I need some of yourn, and it's a great investment opportunity until one of the coal companies you lend to goes all bankrupt and shit. But don't worry, we'll pay you first out of the bankruptcy. You'll get pennies on the dollar, and you know what? We'll pay you with the workers' pensions that we bankrupt out from under. Isn't that clever?" The struggle
never ends.
Up in Michigan, Enbridge, that wonderful Canadian company, Enbridge is trying to invalidate a recent move by Governor Gretchen Whitmer to end the lease for Enbridge to run its Pipeline 5 through the Mackinac Straits. Yeah, because they want to keep that frack gas a flowing, y'all.
Mm-hmm.
Jeff Merkley, junior senator from Oregon, remarked on all of this recently, tweeting this morning, "Every major U.S. bank has now walked away from destructive, risky drilling in the Arctic Refuge. Banks recognize this drilling represents a financial risk as well as a severe blow to our climate. Drilling in the refuge should be stopped entirely to save this natural gem." He was retweeting with his own comment a tweet from the Sierra Club about the Bank of America announcing that it won't back Arctic refuge drilling. But this is just Julius Geezer doing his god-awful worst to screw America, screw it again, and screw it some more, since he can't screw anything else anymore. Probably has something to do with that hair treatment that he takes. But this latest move is described by Adam Colton, of the head of the Alaska Wilderness League, as yet another dangerous political favor, because he's like Sauron if Sauron was a bigger asshole and stupider too. Stupid Sauron. There's another nickname, and we're coming to it so late. And in case you're wondering, Joe Biden is flatly opposed to drilling in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. The Natural Resources Defense Council, you might recall that they just got a whopping boatload of money from Jeff Bezos recently. Something like $100 million. Wow. He's working. No, I'm kidding. I'm sure they'll do good things with the money. But the NRDC tweeted, "Making a mockery of the ongoing public comment period, the Trump administration has announced when they will auction off drilling rights on the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, January 6th. And that is exactly 1 month after the 60th anniversary of the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. How about that? 60th anniversary. I didn't realize that the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge was created in 1960. But it was. And the NRDC tweet was accompanied by a photograph of lots and lots and lots of caribou hanging out on the rolling green hills of the slopes leading down to the beach. Or a river, because I see a caribou drinking, and I don't think they can drink salt water, so it's a river probably. And, of course, it's not just caribou. The Gwich'in people have used that area for a hunting ground for, thousands and thousands of years. And they're in the midst of a lawsuit against the Interior Department and the Bureau of Land Management over leasing along the 1.5 million acres of the coastal plain there. Yeah.
You know what? It's not just the caribou. We're going to fuck the polar bears, too.
Mm-hmm. And there's about 200 species of migratory birds that will be impacted. God alone knows how many fish species. At Environment America, Ellen Montgomery, who is the Public Lands Campaign Director, said, "For decades, the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge has stood as a symbol of our nation's strong natural legacy. Its breathtaking landscape is home to endangered polar bears, caribou, wolves, musk oxen, and migratory birds that travel annually to all 50 states, destroying their home in the craven desire for more oil is a tragic mistake. Once this seal is broken, there's no going back. Industrial-level oil and gas drilling in the Arctic Refuge cannot occur without doing catastrophic damage to vital habitats." Dear God. Well, anybody surprised a guy that would casually let 275,000 Americans die because he didn't want anybody to panic, would happily trash one of the last pristine places in North America, at least in the United States, part of North America. And I'm sure the oil companies are thrilled. Slow Sauron. Ooh, that's pretty good, James in Illinois. Yeah. So, I don't know, you know, I'm hoping there's some sort of protest planned. But you may recall a few years back when they opened up drilling leases in, I think, Utah. I don't think so. It was someone else. But they came in and bid on the lease and wound up getting a federal prison term out of it because they bid with no intention of following through on it. But this is going to be a fire sale. You know, if the free market really is free, what's to stop somebody from going in and bidding on a parcel and then not drilling on it? Oh, no. We'll drill on it someday. We're just saving it for later when prices are better. And just save for it. No, I had every intent. But only when prices reach a profitable level that is defined by our accountants. Why would that be a felony? I think the young man got in trouble because he said, hey, I just did this to fuck with the process. So, that's just another indication of the vandalism that is being practiced because they know, Jesus Christ, they know they're on their way out. Yeah. But I figured that was a great lead story for this thorn in the side Thursday. Oh, note coming in from Kyle in Kentucky, Stan. Subject, even maggots get it? I had a conversation with my father about how people are struggling to make it in the time of the pandemic, and he says, I don't know why Congress doesn't just pass a package that includes some kind of monthly or periodic payment from our taxes for people who can't work, and if they can, maybe reduce it based on how much they make. People can't even pay their bills right now. We have a breakthrough, Bob. Even maggots are starting to understand that a universal basic income is a good idea. I'm going to fall on the floor. Well, make sure you find a soft spot, Kyle. But, wow, that is a breakthrough. Now, the question is, Kyle, did you explain to Dad that the reason we're not doing something for working Americans, hard-working Americans, is because of one person? That Mitch McConnell is really the person who runs America into the ground? That Mitch McConnell is the reason that people are going to go hungry this holiday season in the depth of winter? That people are going to be evicted from their homes? That people are not going to be able to make their, not only not to make their rent payment, but if they can make their rent payment, maybe not make their utility payment? Because that's the That's the reality of it. Goddamn Nancy Pelosi isn't holding it up. She put a bill that would have been of considerable assistance on the table in May 2020. See, May's the fifth month. That's 7 months ago. And what was that quote from Obama's book that Suman told us about yesterday evening? Where they were pitching an idea, and McConnell responded, you're operating under the impression that I care. Oh, okay, it was Josh Fox, Flavio tells me. The guy who made the documentary against fracking and the fake bidding. Josh Fox of the documentary Gasland fame. Right. Let's see. Are we having any? Are we having issues with the? Nope. The stream is streaming merrily along. So, Randy said there was a 1 second glitch in the head-on.live stream. But no, I got my note from Brother Deacon Asa. Yeah, it was the blip was at 5:15. Mm-hmm. Hopefully, no more of those. We had a little incident last night with Chantel crashing. Brother Deacon Asa said, when you said Dirtbag Donnie's drilling den, I totally thought you were talking about the fitting room at the Miss Universe pageant. Ooh, that's just awful. Awful enough for a cowbell. Yep. And all, it says, David in South Carolina, Stan, and all the fucking people cheering Donald Trump on. Still plenty out here.
We got to drill in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge because that's how America's getting great again, so we can be energy independent.
Yeah, I know. What's in a name? Scott in San Diego notes, Dickhead or Dipshit Donnie are all well and good, but I think I've come up with a new name for him, Heinous Anus. Well, that's not half bad. The Heinous Anus Harangutan. Heinous Anus the Harangutan. Yeah, one of these days we're going to have a not-for-children's book out of all of this. Yeah. Oh, and of course, Bob! I raced home from work yesterday to watch the second half of the Steelers game, only to witness both teams looking very sluggish and inept, as the quality of play was simply terrible. Then Pittsburgh's best defensive player, Bud Dupree, a budding star, oh dear, we're off and running, injured himself and is done for the season. Having been a fan of the Steelers growing up, largely because when they weren't on television, I could tune into a West Virginia radio station out of Wheeling, WWVA, 1170 on your AM dial, and catch all the games featuring this crazy color announcer by the name of Myron Cope. Oh, I remember Myron. Myron Cope on sports. He was the sidekick to the late, great Jack Fleming, one of the greatest football and college basketball voices ever. I would know because he was the voice of the Mountaineers. And many a happy hour I spent listening to Jack. But Myron Cope was his sidekick in calling Steelers games. I'm sorry, I mispronounced it. Steelers games. Yen's going to watch the Steelers game? Oh, absolutely. Yeah. When I first got to WVU, I wasn't a Steelers fan. By the time I left, I was. It was that or, you know, not survive in a house full of Steelers fans. So anyway, Myron was unique, to say the least. And I remember well one time Myron was just babbling on, and with that wonderful stentorian voice, Jack Fleming said, "Shut up, Myron." I don't know if I've ever heard that in a play-by-play and color team before, but shut up, Myron. Back to Joey Giraffe's note. Yesterday, I decided to watch the game on television and listen via the internet, something that was not available in the 70s and 80s. After the game, they were interviewing Pittsburgh's head coach, Mike Tomlin, and he wasn't happy. The after-game press conference just deteriorated as Tomlin grew more and more disgusted talking about his team's play and the loss of his best player. Finally, Tomlin, after fielding a question from the press about the game, just told the reporter to suck it. Oh, God, yes, Jeffrey. Jeffrey surmises, I guess the head coach of the Steelers just could not cope. Even Jeffrey knows about Myron. Yeah, thanks, Jeffrey. Nobody saw that coming. Well, guess who has the corona? Y'all remember our friend Polly Wanna Cracker? Yes, precious Polly has the virus so badly she's bedridden. She's lost her taste and her sense of smell. What now, Jeffrey? Jeffrey explains, Well, hell, we knew she had lost any good taste she had in her ability to smell when she voted for Trump for a second time. Yes, she is a hollaback girl. As usual, Jeffrey's on top of things. Of course, we all remember intellectually lazy Susan. Now, she lost her job due to lack of business because of the corona, and she, too, also is a hollaback. According to my wife, Polly Wannacracker posted,
"We are so lucky to have Trump as president, or everything would be so much worse."
And my wife wonders why I don't want to spend any time with these people. I really only have one thing to say to the both of them since they voted twice for this mask hole in the White House. Suck it! If anybody has to have the virus, let it be you. You're just goddamn dumb. Yes, Jeffrey. Jeffrey ruminates, and he really does, because I suspect Jeffrey is a ruminant. At this point, I don't think Joey can cope. Don't wear it out, Jeffrey. So, speaking of death, on this day, December 3rd in Cincinnati, I heard it first while watching Monday Night Football, that 11 people were trampled to death when thousands of people stampeded the entrance of the Riverfront Coliseum to see The Who. Rumors are true that Billable Rick did attend that concert, but did not step on any toes or bodies upon entering the arena. Still too early, Joey. Yes, Jeffrey. Jeffrey adds,
"Yeah, upon arrival, the authorities were stumped, as this was one of Cincinnati's biggest whodunits of all time."
Yeah, Jeffrey has some real killer puns. Still too early. All right, y'all, here's the deal. We need a stampede of people in Georgia. See what he did there? For every weekend until January 5th, my friend Liz is currently doing very safe curing of ballots, but her goal is to cover as many major street corners as possible in the suburbs of Atlanta. All you have to do is hold a stuffed giraffe in one arm and two signs in the other. Really is easy. If anybody's considering being a part of the signing for Warnock and Ossoff, please let me know at Jeffrey, but it's a curious spelling, G-E-O-F-F-E-R-Y, Jeffrey, the giraffe. Giraffe is spelled per normal. That's two F's, not one. Jeffrey the Giraffe, 724. Jeffrey the Giraffe, 724, at gmail.com. And I'll forward the information to Liz. So this has been Joey's Journal for Thorn in the Side Thursday, the third day of December, 2020, with exactly 4 weeks remaining in this benighted year, with Jeffrey signing us off at this time. Signing us off. Right. Well, that's a lovely idea. I doubt a lot of people are going to be able to go down there, and under pandemic circumstances, people might not be quite as heroic as you are, Joey. But there's lots of phone banking to be done, and there's God knows a need for funding for Ossoff and Warnock. Remember, the special runoff election is January the 5th. Okay. And I don't know, maybe Joey, do you want to take on the burden of finding out who and where and how to contact to do phone banking? I'll bet you even Barack Obama, maybe even Michelle, does some phone banking. So you'd be in good company. And you can do it from the safe comfort of your own home, hopefully far, far away from any virus particles. Everything rides on it. I mean, it was interesting back in 2017 when we watched Doug Jones take out Roy Tolamore, but it really didn't make that much difference in the overall, it didn't make any difference in the overall makeup of the Senate. This, however, can, and if we're successful, will. And all we got to do is figure out a way to make Joe Manchin pretend convincingly to be a Democrat. And really all he has to do is vote with the Democrats in a 50-50 split, so that it's 50 Democrats, 50 Republicans, so that brand new Senator Kamala Harris our brand new vice president, former Senator Kamala Harris, she's not former yet, can tell Mitch McConnell to sit down and shut up. Now, from a procedural standpoint, I'm a little bit uncertain. I'm on shifting sands where this is concerned, because I'm not sure when it is that the Senate will vote to choose a majority leader. If that happens before the inauguration, there won't be anybody to tell Mitch to sit down and shut up. And I guess theoretically in a 50-50 Senate, well, what if it's a tie? And I just, honest to Pete, I know we worry about Joe Manchin, and rightfully so. But considering how nasty Mitch McConnell has treated him, you know, McConnell even campaigned against Joe Manchin back in 2018. Hopefully, Joe remembers that old adage that revenge is a dish best served cold, and serves it to McConnell on an absolutely frozen platter. Mm-hmm. Let's see here. So thank you, Lou. We got the January 5th reminder covered. Oh, that's right. That's right. Correction. Thank you, Albert. Yesterday you mentioned someone playing a Beatles album backwards. Sgt. Pepper wasn't the album that weirdos played backwards. It was the White Album. True. Revolution number 9. Turn me on, dead man. Turn me on, dead man. Turn me on, dead man. Yeah, you didn't have to play it backwards. It was in Strawberry Fields Forever. You just hear what later on was said to be John saying cranberry sauce, but you know all the because conspiracy theories run deep in the in our psyche, and it's hard to believe now. But there were a lot of people who were absolutely convinced that Paul McCartney was dead. And that there were hidden messages about that, whether it be in Revolution number nine, or whether it be, you know, I buried Paul. It's not like that kind of stupidity is new among us. No, no. As to the stupid prohibition on bank financing, Steve in New York says, seems to me the real effect would be for banks not to finance any energy ventures, dirty or clean. That would affect clean energy more because they don't have the capital to self-fund. And as to thorns in the side, the problem is that we're beyond thorns. It's more like railroad spikes at this point. Well, I tend to agree, but you lose the alliterative value. A railroad spike in the side Thursday just doesn't have the same kind of panache, Steve. Obligatory Star Trek reference? Lee in New York says, thank you for quoting Khan. Yes, an old Klingon proverb, he described it as in Wrath of Khan. But isn't it said to be actually an old mob proverb? I don't know. So... Lee pointing out along the way, Arctic Wildlife Refuge, caribou or is it reindeer? The war on Christmas is on. December, the month to send Santa his eviction notice.
Yeah, you know, the fact of the matter is that whole North Pole workshop thing, it's not worth it anymore. Like Melanoma says, who gives a fuck about Christmas?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, let's never forget that. You don't have to be a religious maniac to appreciate Christmas. You can appreciate it in every bit of secular fashion. I mean, what we celebrate as Christmas was celebrated for a hell of a long time before it got little fake baby Jesus, sweet fake baby Jesus attached to it. Saturnalia, observations of the solstice among pagan peoples, that kind of thing. It, yeah. Hey, first past the post. Thank you, Jeremy. We are now down to $530 to go to catch up with the week. And if we knocked out 235, that would at least mean we were done through, you know, yesterday. So hopefully we can do that. As to the Georgia runoff, Scott in San Diego says, last month and now this month and again in early January, I've committed to sending $10 split evenly between Ossoff and Warnock's campaigns. I'm doing it via actblue.com, and I invite everybody to do this too if they possibly can. It looks like I said a not-for-children book. It looks like Silent R. At the pace you're going, you'll want to have a book for adults, Bob. Right. Thank you. Thank you to Speed sending me the story of the activist who was sentenced to 2 years for oil lease fraud. That wasn't Josh Fox, Flavio. Thank you, Speed. That was Tim DeChristopher. Mr. DeChristopher had many other lawful ways to express his disapproval with the oil and gas leasing process, said U.S. District Court Judge D. Benson at the hearing. See, he didn't pay up. But, you know, the Natural Resources Defense Council and the rest of that list of big greens that I mentioned in the story a couple of weeks back, they have hundreds of millions of Bezos dollars. Why not participate in these leases, pay for the leases, and then just not drill? I mean, if you're going to, because that's good faith participation. Choosing when you drill, I mean, there are time limits on these things, on the lease and whatnot, but they're going to go for a song. Never mind the song, and I'm not going to sing because the fundraising hole's too deep. But, you know, for instance, in the coal industry, you can apply for and get a permit to blow the bejesus out of the oldest mountains on planet Earth, and you don't even have to move the first spade full of earth for 5 years. And then, at least in West Virginia, If your permit expires and some grassroots activist group, say like Coal River Mountain Watch, steps in and says, hey, y'all, the lease has expired. They don't get to mine there. Well, then the West Virginia Department of Environmental Protection steps in and says, well, I mean, 5 years. They had 5 years and everything. But, I mean, we don't want to be hard on them. I mean, times is hard in the coal industry, what with the Obama war on coal and whatnot that went on for so long. We're just gonna pretend that it didn't have no five-year limit to it. And, you know, they can mine that. They can blow the shit out of that mountain whenever they get around to it. That's essentially what happened. So with that being the case, I mean, I've never bid on a drilling lease, but they are. They're going to go for cheap. And so why not use some of those Bezos dollars and put it into the federal treasury? Not a terrible idea. The Biden administration is going to need money. Then just don't drill. Hell, if you want to make imaging bank on it, put up big signs around the area of your lease saying this is a no drilling zone, courtesy of, say, NRDC or the World Wildlife Fund, or, you know, whoever those groups were that got those sweet millions of Bezos dollars. Something like a billion. Remember the story? Something like $1 billion. Worth of Bezos coin. Some of it was to be used for advocating for railroads. Okay. But you'd think, I mean, is it too late to... Dadgummit, that's the problem with the
with the Bezos Environmental Fund. There's no way to apply for it. Don't call us, we'll call you is their operational philosophy. But God, wouldn't it be cool to say, hey, give me $100 million, Jeff, and I'll go up and I'll bid on lease after lease after lease, and we'll pay for the leases, and then we won't drill, because that'll just be our business, because free market. And if they say, hey, you didn't intend to drill, say, well, you know, we're waiting. We will drill no well before it's time. And the time's just not right. Because when we drill, we want to make a real shit ton of money. We don't want any of them $60 a barrel shit ton. No, we want that $120 a barrel money. So we're just going to sit on our leases until some crazy ass shit blows up in the, oh my God, wait a minute. There it is. There's the why. His buddies, Nitwit Nero's buddies in the hydrocarbon industry think, okay, we'll get the leases and then it's like what did William Randolph Hearst say a little over 120 years ago, you just get me the picture. You provide the pictures. I'll provide the war. William Randolph Hearst was said to have quipped that at the beginning of the Spanish-American War. And, you know, remember the Maine, all of that shit. Yeah. So he gins up the war, oil prices go up, and then people go in and drill for cheap. Because that's the thing. You pay on a quantified basis. It's not like you pay for the lease. No. And then you pay the government out of, and I mean it's pennies on the dollar. Because that's another thing Republicans do. You pay a pittance to the government on what you extract. It's not even enough to cover the externalized costs of the burning of the production and the burning of the fossil fuels. Hell, it's not even enough to pay for the cleanup when one of these things blows up and sprays and spills and leaks. No. Hire the help, says James in Illinois. Pay the workers to sit in class and learn a new trade. There's an idea. It's worth remembering that Alaska sits at roughly the same line of latitude as, well, Germany. And somehow or another, Germany manages to make wind turbines and solar panels, particularly solar panels, work that far north. Maybe we could have a new rush of people into Alaska working to build solar farms, wind turbines, that sort of thing. Now, see, Steve in New York knows how to speak lawyer. And what you would say is, we intend to make... No, this isn't giraffery. This is some asshole... Not an asshole. This is somebody who has themselves an Arctic National Wildlife lease. And when asked, when are you going to start drilling there, Fred? We intend to make our intentions as to when we intend to drill plain at a later date when the market is such that it will determine our intentions. This is reasonable and prudent business practice. Why, right you are. See how it works? Yeah. As to Kyle's father and universal basic income, Lee in New York says, Kyle's dad will come to his senses when he realizes that the money will not come from wealthy corporations and people. The money will come from the working poor. Oh, somebody's got their cynic hat on today. That revenge quote serving as the ad hoc Horn Research Department. The idea of revenge is a dish that is best served cold. The idea's origin is obscure. The French diplomat Charles Maurice de Talleyrand-Périgord, 1754 to 1838, has been credited with the saying, "La vengeance est un mets que l'on doit manger froid." Revenge is a dish that must be eaten cold, albeit without supporting detail. Well, Talleyrand was no slouch politically. So that's that makes some sense. He, you know, it's the kind of thing you'd expect from him or Metternich or maybe Bismarck. You know, Bismarck gave us the two things in life you don't want to see made are law and sausages. Or something that could be transferred to, say, the Middle East. Back when he declared the whole of the Balkans is not worth the bones of one Pomeranian grenadier. Yeah, too bad we didn't say that the entirety of the Middle East is not worth the bones of one American soldier back in, say, 1991 or 2003. I told you we had some thorns. You didn't think I was kidding, did you? And we haven't even gotten to the woohoo crazy part. Because there is a woohoo crazy part, I promise. Holy mackerel, yes, there is. Up in Michigan, which curiously enough is also the title of one of Hemingway's great early short stories. Up in Michigan, they had Rudy Giuliani hosted what he called was an election fraud hearing. This happened last night. And I don't think even Rudy was particularly tickled that a bizarre blonde Karen sort of became the star of the show. There has been speculation, and when I run the clip, you'll understand why. There's been speculation that the woman might have been drunker than Adam's off ox. Other Michiganders, however, and perhaps when she hears this, our pal Joy in Ann Arbor might opine. Others said, no, she's not drunk. There's just a whole lot of people in Michigan who sound like they're drunk. Steve in New York is already familiar with the clip. He noted, that woman at the hearing was a thorn I took with a healthy dose of Thorazine. It felt great. You'll understand here in just a matter of moments what it is that Steve's talking about. She was being questioned by a member of the Michigan legislature, and she didn't like being questioned because she, by God, wanted to, she wanted to get her points out. Because she'd been working on them real hard. I mean, she had her hair up in a messy bun, and she had her smart girl glasses on. Her makeup was flawless. She was wearing a tasteful scarf over a white blouse and what looks to be a sweater or jacket or something. And by God, she was not to be deterred. Oh no. No, hell no.
Completely off.
Hold on.
The poll book is completely off. Completely off.
Off that by 30,000?
I'd say that poll book is off by over 100,000.
Off by over 100,000. Mm-hmm. It's easy to see where
America would think that she was loaded to the gills, but no, apparently that's just Michigan speak. And I've spent all day trying to figure out, is this some heretofore undisclosed love child of Sarah Palin's? Or is this the grown-up daughter of, what was her name? Was on Saturday Night Live, Victoria Jackson. Because she looks a little like Victoria Jackson. And it certainly comes off like it could very well have been an old Saturday Night Live skit. Stop talking, Bob. Let her talk.
The poll book is completely off. Completely off.
Off that by 30,000?
I'd say that poll book is off by over 100,000. That poll book, why don't you look at the registered voters on there? How many registered voters are on there? Do you even know the answer to that?
No, I guess I'm trying to get to the bottom of this here.
Zero. There's zero.
So my question then.
Zero. 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 Zero what? Zero, like that's your IQ, lady? This is, did I mention you might want a hockey puck for this? And a little bit of duct tape? No, a lot of duct tape. We got to figure out some way of, you know what? I think what you do is you put the hockey puck in your mouth and you bite down real good. You get it in there real snug. And then you take, and you don't want to impede your nostrils because you want to be able to breathe and everything. But below your nostrils and over the hockey puck, you put a couple of circuits of Saran wrap because you don't want the duct tape to stick to your hair. And then you duct tape, because I've been wondering about this. I've been worrying about this for years, because getting the duct tape out of one's hair is a real booger. So once you've got the Saran wrap on, then you go around with the Gorilla brand duct tape. And you've got an extra layer of protection, too, to keep you from shooting the hockey puck across the room when you start when you start barking from the crazy. Man.
Is if the
guess how many? Wait, what about the turnout rate? 120%.
And at this point in time, Rudy Giuliani, at least who's and he appears to be spraying on orange now in emulation of his God Emperor. He reaches over and taps this woman on the elbow like, ixnay on the azy cray. It doesn't work. She's on a roll.
Let's let Representative Johnson ask his question.
So the poll book number, okay, there's two things that could happen here. Either the poll book number, if ballots were counted multiple times, there's two options.
Now, I want you to know that the guy trying to ask the question is a little neo-maxi-zoom dweeby who is Representative Stephen Johnson. He's a member of the Michigan House of Representatives, and he's a Republican from Michigan House District 72 representing Wayland, Michigan. So, in theory, he's a friendly. Why else would he be sitting there presiding over a bullshit hearing that was cobbled together by a shameless old pettifogger who still, as Joe Scarborough noted during my filthy morning habit today, for some reason or another, still has a law license, Rudy Giuliani. So this guy's a fellow traveler, and he's trying to get the information out, but Sarah Palin from the UP won't let him.
Option number one is that the poll book numbers are not going to match.
They don't.
The actual. Not by thousands and thousands of votes. That's not what we see right now.
Take a look again.
Option number two is that they essentially were filling in names of people who didn't vote.
Dead people, too?
dead people?
I guess, Representative Johnson, ask his question, and then when he's done.
I thought that was his answer. Okay.
Well, I guess my question here is why we're not seeing the poll book off by 30,000 votes.
Now, bear in mind, this woman has no expertise whatsoever. For all I know, she was the best dressed person in the Walmart there in Lansing, and Rudy Giuliani just said, "Hey, you want to come and do a hearing with me? I'm going to do a hearing."
That's not the case.
What did you guys do? Take it and do something crazy to it?
I'm just saying the numbers are not off by 30,000 votes. So
I know what I saw.
That they're
If there are a lot of people, and I apologize because I know we got friends in Michigan, a number of them. I think of folks like our friend Marcy and Joy. And my question is, if that's just the way some Michiganders speak, how do Michigan cops ever formulate probable cause to make a DUI arrest? If everybody's just walking around sounding like they're drunk and that's just how they talk, how do you ever know who's sober or drunk? I'm kind of flummoxed.
I know what I saw, and I signed something saying that if I'm wrong, I can go to prison. Okay. Did you?
Okay, I'm just trying to ask you a
legitimate question here.
Yeah, let's let Representative Johnson ask his question.
That's the third time.
Don't interrupt him, and then if you want to respond to it, that's fine. Did you have more, Representative?
Yeah, I guess I just want to keep following back up with the poll book. So are we saying that the poll book is either wildly off or that they are filling in names?
It's wildly off, and dead people voted, and illegals voted. Okay. So that's my answer.
Illegals voted, and that's my answer. Wow. Just wow.
And like I said, Giuliani reached over and tapped her to try to get her to calm the hell down. And even that didn't work.
1,000?
I'd say that poll book is off by over 100,000.
Let's see what it is. We'll hear it. I mean, I can't. Steve in New York noted that he's listened to this 100 times today. So have I. I just can't get enough of this. What specifically is it that causes Rudy Giuliani to reach over and ixnay on the old pay ook bay? You're making us ook lay ad bay.
How are you talking about? Is that foreign language?
That poll book? Why don't you look at the registered voters on there? How many registered voters are on there? Do you even know the answer to that?
No, I guess I'm trying to get to the bottom.
Zero.
Of this here.
Oh, wait. Rudy backs up enough, sits back in his chair so that you can actually see the expression on his face. And he looks like the face you'd make right after Nitwit Nero said, "No, really, I want you to bite the head off the bat, Rudy. Do it. You got to do it. If you don't do it, you don't love me."
Zero. There's zero.
So question
there. That or he's trying to hold back one of those farts where you don't know if you're gambling or if you're going to gamble and lose. You know, that kind of puckered up. It's a green persimmon face is what it is.
Is if the
guess how many? Wait, what about the turnout rate? 120%.
That's the one that gets Rudy to reach over and tap her on the elbow. And Victoria Jackson, we'll call her Victoria Jackson, pulls her elbow away. And frankly, if Rudy Giuliani tapped you on the elbow and you were a woman at least 30 years younger than Rudy Giuliani, you'd pull away too. Mm-hmm. Because, I don't know, maybe she's seen the second Borat movie. You never know when Rudy's going to reach down the front of his pants and said, right, with a glass of scotch in his hands.
Let's let Representative John.
The 120% voter turnout. That's the part that lit Rudy up. Bless his heart. George Conway, you know, one of those Project Lincoln Republicans, tweeted, "Totally want to see this woman booked on Jeanine Pirro's show." And I can understand the impulse. So it's just going to be, I guess, a parade of crazy all the way to January the 20th. When he holds his own, when Nitwit Nero holds his own rally to announce his 2024 candidacy, trying to compete with the actual inauguration. I'm still holding out hope that maybe the minute that he's not president anymore, that the indictments will be unsealed in the Southern District of New York, and there will be an FBI agent who walks up and says, "Mr. Not a President, would you come with us, please?" I mean, a guy can hope. There's that word again. Please don't take it away from me. Steve noting, aliens voted. I hear Trump won the Kolob vote, whereas Biden won the Norblap 9 vote. And you know why that is? Because the aliens of Norblap 9 are amorphous and multi-limbed, and that's why they can get on those polling books in Michigan like that. Mm-hmm. Got to watch those Norblapians. Matt in San Francisco, subject line, IQ points. If it wasn't for your commentary in between clips, I'd be required to hold you responsible for the minute-by-minute reduction of my IQ. Sorry, Matt. No sympathy here, my friend. Because I've had to consume this multiple times today. And, well, hell, we'll find out the next time I put on shoes that require the tying of laces whether I can still do that or not. I mean, we went yesterday from Michael Flynn calling for a military coup and a new election, and L. Lynn Wood endorsing that and hollering at 1776 again all over, at 1776 all over again, oblivious to the black guys standing behind him going, "What?" Well, all right, we're maggots. We got a job to do. Come on. Guess we got to go and chop that cotton. It's 1776 again. Where were your ancestors? No? Yeah, okay. Might take a while to get there. I hope they got some cotton growing. Because it's 1776 again. I mean, the country hadn't even agreed that they were three-fifths of a human being at that point. They weren't even three-fifths. And that's just the reality of the situation. And then today we get this. I've said it for so long that I think we just take it as a matter of as read. When I've said that no matter how weird yesterday was, today's going to be weirder still. And no matter how weird today has been, tomorrow will be even more weird. This yesterday in Georgia and this in Michigan, I mean, technically, they both happened on the same day. But they came through in different news cycles. And this is the poster child for that universal truth. From L. Lynn Wood and Mike Flynn to paranoid, goofy Michigan lady. You know, sometimes I do that, just take a deep breath in through the nose, out through the mouth, and it'll knock a couple of points off your blood pressure.
and it'll bring back a little bit of clarity. Hi, Clarity. And it helps you to recenter. Sometimes I do it here, and Agnes will say, look at me and say, what's wrong? Nothing. I'm just keeping it together. Keep it together. K-I-T, kit. Keep it together. Kit. Keep it together. Right. Oh, there's so much of it. Letting go now. Letting go now. Letting everything go. We're relaxed. We're calm. We're not a sizzling piece of bacon on a hot griddle. I want you to visualize your favorite place, the place where you're most at peace. Hear the waves of the ocean lapping gently against the shore, or perhaps a roaring, pounding surf. Letting go. Letting go. This really is a full-service radio program. You got to pay good money for a relaxation exercise like that somewhere else. When I'm badly in need of stress reduction, at least when the weather's more decent, I'll go down Mill Creek Trail and go down to the creek itself. And that brook really does babble. Not like she doesn't babble. The creek doesn't babble like Michigan Lady does. But it babbles and it burbles. And you'll either relax or feel the sudden urge to go and pee. But it will, one way or the other, it'll change your attitude. Wow, I think I may have over-oxygenated. I'm a little lightheaded. Time to run the stress quotient up again. Yeah. So we are past the top of the hour. And we are, we've got $530 to go in fundraising. Sorry there are no challenges on the table or anything, but sometimes we just gotta try to knock it down. And so here we are. Jimmy in the Great Northwest said, was that Victoria Jackson? She also sounds like a wannabe Valley girl, but from Jersey. Now, that's pure Michigan. That's pure Michigan. And I have a feeling that, I'll just wait to see if we get confirmation or other commentary from our pal, Joy in Ann Arbor. So, Giuliani farted in court, Arnold says. If I find an unbranded video, I'll forward it. Arnold adds, you know, I put her IQ at about 84 or so. And reminds us that the late great philosopher and rock and roller, Chubby Checker, once said, never trust a fart. Because it's always a gamble. Always. Ooh, that's good. Lee in New York. Movie parody. Haley Joel Osment in the movie The Sixth Recount. I see dead people voting. Everywhere. And Silent R. Lamar says, great show, Bob. You're bringing out the devil in me. I'm so ready to send a snow cone to somebody in the Middle East for the hell of it and sign it from Donald J. Trump. I don't think it'll get there intact unless you've got one of those Pfizer 90 below. But you're welcome to try, Silent R. David in South Carolina, Stan, says, if that hearing was not an SNL skit,
It soon will be.
Yeah, because there will be, I presume there will be some sort of a Christmas episode. Hell, maybe they'll invite Victoria Jackson back for it. Then again, it may be unchristian to write. But given what a crazy right-winger Victoria Jackson is, oh my God. I mean, she could knock that out of the park. She wouldn't even have to build a character for it. We'd know that she was method acting, that she was living in the character, that she had tapped sense memory to really bring her to life. Yeah. Oh my God, Bob Silent R says, as an engineer, working with the square root of nothing is not fun. But working with the square root of stupid, I quite enjoy. The square root of stupid. That's good. That's good. Oh dear. Could this be real? Don just sent me the video that Arnold referenced. Oh, I didn't know that. They backmastered in rain, too. Thank you, Steve. Brother Deacon Steve, all-around great guy from Georgistan, has entered the chat room, so that we are co-moderating this evening. Let's see if we can get this... And it's Rudy Giuliani. Rudy Giuliani. Farting in court. I mean, can they play this? Will they be able to play this tomorrow morning on Morning Joe? I don't know. So we better play it now.
The answer,
a point of order.
The answer that I gave you is they didn't bother to interview a single witness. Just like you, they don't want to know the truth. Well, you probably know the truth. The answer,
a point of order.
The answer that I gave you is they didn't bother to interview a single witness. Just like you, they don't want to know.
Oh, that was a squeaker, all right. Thanks, Don.
When's a fart joke not fun? And that's a rhetorical question. I don't need any theorizing.
It's titled, Rudy Giuliani just farted in court and the poor lady next to him heard it. Yeah, because she responds visually. Again, thanks to Don in British Columbia. Much appreciated. Mercy. Hey, stand by a sec. All right, now let's, since we're closing in on the halfway point of the program, let's run over and check in with Scott in San Diego. Haven't heard from Scott in a while. Hey, Scott.
Hey, baby. How are you?
Oh, you know, just
yes,
you know.
I know. To let you know that I have had some education in spite of myself, when you played the little clip there of Rudy's flatulent moment,
Did somebody step on a duck?
The spiders are barking, Bob.
Yeah, see, you went for the barking spiders. I was thinking about did somebody step on the old... Hey, who stepped on the duck?
You transported magically to Mr. Onofrio's ninth grade English literature class at Bishop Ireton High School in Alexandria, Virginia. Out of which I flunked after my second year there and then went into public schools. But we read, one of the books that we read that year was Chaucer's Canterbury Tales. And wasn't it the Miller's Tale that used the expression at a pivotal moment in the story, he let fly with a fart? Am I remembering correctly? I'm sure you would remember this.
I know that line is in the Canterbury Tales. I don't remember if it's the Miller's Tale. I mean, the Wife of Bath tells some body stuff, too.
Yeah, I'm almost positive it's the Miller's Tale. And I don't know, somewhere on my many, many bookshelves, I've got my paperback edition of Canterbury Tales from high school. This is the one where the red hot poker, I don't want to do any spoilers.
Yeah, I mean, it's only been around since the 14th century, but let's be careful here.
Well, you know, the expiration date, there is none when you're talking about classic literature.
Hey, could you watch could you watch scraping your microphone around?
Oh, I'm sorry. Wait a minute.
It's rubbing against your shirt or something.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Is this better?
Much.
Okay. Yeah, I'm sorry. I had my headset on, and while I was waiting, I put on my sweat jacket. But anyway, Victoria Jackson. Now, there's a name from the past. We don't hear much from her or about her in recent years, decades, whatever. She went off on the crazy train, and another cast member who I used to enjoy listening to, used to do the weekend update, Dennis Miller, took a big old toke from the crazy bong. And those are the only two that I can think of from Saturday Night Live that went right.
Didn't Norm MacDonald, too? And I know Joe Piscopo did.
Well, I don't know about Norm MacDonald. I watched a thing of his on either Netflix or Amazon Prime not long ago, a stand-up thing that he did maybe a year ago. And I don't think he did, or if he did, it was only temporary. Piscopo, I don't know about him. He was roided up, I think, because he was big into bodybuilding. Is he still around? I thought he was very ill there for a while.
I'm not sure. Let's ask Mr. Google. He was big into weightlifting for a while.
Yeah. Bodybuilding or something.
Wikipedia uses the present tense, so he is still among the quick.
Right. Oh, good. Oh, good. Well, I like everybody in as much as they are doing something useful.
He's 69. He's 69 years old.
God, I didn't realize he was young.
Yeah, he'll be 70 in June.
Well, good for him. Now, another one that went a little crazy, who I still love despite it because of the work that he's done as an actor, even though he has just gone absolutely Looney Tunes on us, is James Woods.
Oh, I despise him.
Oh, but I understand his politics just suck big donkey dicks in hell. But as an actor, I've seen him in a dozen or more films or shows over the years, just without peer. But what happened? What has happened to some of these people where they're bopping along pretty normally and then they drink the Kool-Aid or something happens?
Oh, they didn't get a pony when they were a child and it just kicks in. I mean, consider, James Woods, John Voight, Tracy's neighbor. You got to wonder, will they take the vaccine?
I don't know.
Because they're probably going to be in the second round. Agnes and me, I don't know, she might make second round because she's immunocompromised. But maybe the third. But people like me, I think we're going to be like fourth round. So this time next year, earliest.
It'll be, I don't think it'll be that long. I think you guys will get it you won't be in the very, very
last. Don't say
last
get it. Don't say get it. Don't say get it.
No, no. You will be receiving your injection or injections, depending on which one you get. You won't be at the very, very last. That's that poor, unfortunate group of people who will be at the 99-cent store picking up their batch and self-administering.
Well, I hate to. I'm not disagreeing to be disagreeable, but we kind of covered this ground yesterday evening, and the way the numbers play out, we're still going to be vaccinating round one probably by end of summer of 2021.
Wow. Now, I'm sorry I missed it last night because I didn't realize the first round would go that long.
Yeah, because they're going to have to be able to, A, manufacture it, and depending on which version is out there, I mean, there's a planet to vaccinate.
Oh, screw those other people, Bob.
Yeah, I know.
We did. It wasn't until W's second term that money for AIDS got sent to Africa, for fuck's sake. And what year was that? From to 2004 to 2008. Speaking of which. The other night, just for the hell of it, I watched and the band played on because I was in a pandemic frame of mind. I wanted to take my mind off of our current troubles, so I watched that. We're not acquitting ourselves very, very well in this current health crisis. And you would think that we would have learned something from that last great pandemic. And earlier you mentioned Hearst, William Randolph Hearst. Just this afternoon, before 2 o'clock rolled around, I fired up the old TCM app and watched Citizen Kane. First time I've watched that in many a moon. I don't know, man. I've been out of the political loop a little bit because, frankly, I'm trying to preserve what little mental health and stability I have. And I've got to dose myself. I've got to micro-dose myself in terms of stuff that I, political shit. Because this man is, I've said it as my mantra, delusional, demented, inept fool. Well, he's gone beyond that. I'm not even sure what to call him at this point. I couldn't even bring myself to watch his 45-minute no press allowed video yesterday. Did you? I'm sure you covered that.
Well, no. That was just the maunderings of a madman.
Well, that's what I mean. I mean, he's. It's you've got to go pretty far to go beyond my mantra, demented, delusional, inept fool.
No, the one comment is that I made was that we are now living in a time where the president of the United States makes Captain Queeg look stable.
Yeah, get him some of them little steel bearings to roll around in his head and. So you go
yeah, they
on
thought
and
they
on
caught me, but I fooled
them.
I figured it out with the strawberries.
Yeah, this is the key, and I would have proved it using geometric logic. God damn, Bob, help us! I
forgot that. Like, using,
do we have
yeah,
left?
Using geometric logic.
Yeah.
I mean, wouldn't you have to at least use the calculus with a strawberry?
Well, I don't know. You take the square root of the number of seeds embedded in the little pits and divide by the stem, subtract the hypotenuse,
and run it all through the quadratic equation. Sure.
Yeah, there you go. not to get too highfalutin on you, Bob.
Mathematical.
Oh, Christ, I can't math. I mean, beyond basic addition, subtraction.
You know what? That was my high school motto. I can't math.
Yeah, there you go. That's me in a nutshell. I didn't care to know what X was, Bob. I mean, why? Life has got, there's got
it's
to
not
always
a, be. X is not even in my top 10 letters of the alphabet.
There's got to be some mystery in life. I mean, come on. And I don't know. And I'm sorry, I've been missing all the fun on the program, and I'm sure you guys have been having
it. Well, I've been worried about you.
No, I kind of warned you the last time I called.
I know, yeah, you said you were taking a break.
That not that I am disinterested or anything, but just for my own, here's how gullible I am, Bob. I thought that come November 3rd, and maybe a week later after all the votes were tallied, that things would, to quote that noted political philosopher Red Fox, when you can read the handwriting on the wall, you're in the toilet.
Right, right.
That Trump would, in fact, read the handwriting on the wall, or someone would mention it to him and say, here's what we do in a case when you are not victorious to the extent that you would like to be in a general election, for 4 more years. We call the Beacons men, who are careful, quick, and kind, and we start packing our shit, so that when the van pulls up during the inauguration, they will move all your crap out, and by the time the big parade is over, all of Mr. Biden's stuff is in the house.
I don't think we can do that. It'll take weeks to fumigate the White House.
Well, God, yeah. I mean, I hope that someone,
because I'm convinced that the maggots in the White House are taking the grates off of the HVAC vents and coughing into them even as we speak.
Yeah, and you cannot put it past this crew, because that's how they operate. Think of the worst thing that you can think of in terms of irresponsible behavior, and then double it, and then double that, and then triple that. And you still are only edging up to what these fuckers are capable of.
Yeah.
It's just
I mean, you can see them down on their knees, coughing into the vents, can't you?
Oh, sure. And I hope, like I was going to say, I hope someone has made provisions, because when you have a president, I don't care who the president is, there's a certain risk. Well, I mean, obviously I care who the president is, but in the case of all presidents up until now, there has always been the case of protecting the chief executive of the country. I think everybody can agree that that should be part of the program. Well, these people don't have any concern about who has to occupy the House next. And I'm sure.
Oh, but they are concerned. They are concerned. During the debate, he was trying to get Joe Biden sick.
Well, yeah, that too. I know. But what I'm saying is, I hope that the people on the transition team, on Biden's team, have figured out a plan B, so that come January 20th, after the oath has been taken, that President Biden can have a safe environment in which to work until the cleanup has been accomplished. Because you've got the White House, you've got the old executive office building, you've got Camp David. I mean, those are the three main places where Trump has been, in recent months. And it's just, you remember that little prank that they pulled on that the Clinton outgoing Clinton people pulled on?
I talked about that last night. It turned out not to be real. They done took all the W's off all the keyboards.
those innocent long ago days, even if it was an imaginary story, it's quaint compared to where we are now. I just, when things begin to calm down, but then again, my words convict me. Who the fuck am I trying to kid? We are so far away from calm down and normal that the light from calm down and normal will take months to get here, years to get here even. I frankly don't know how you stand it. I really don't. I don't know how you cope with it day by day. I mean, just because you are delivering the information doesn't make you immune to the implications of the information. And I know it's not much, but on that basis, I'm going to send at least $5 when I get off this phone here. And it will probably be the first of two little installments for my little monthly thing. I mean, I would normally, send it all at once, but I really am serious about that email that I sent with, using ActBlue to support the two Democrats running for that in that Georgia runoff. That is critical that we get that done. It is absolutely bone-chilling critical. And to anybody who can help in whatever way to make sure that John Ossoff and Raphael Warnock are elected and that there's no mistake about it, we must get that done to have even a sliver of a chance.
Yeah, anything.
For the new president. I mean, and that's only going to be half the battle because Mitch is still going to be there. And the others, God damn, I mean, it's... Oh, and that I'm sure you've heard and talked about reports of they're rediscovering their inner fiscal conservative.
Nature. Oh, right, because suddenly deficits matter again, yes.
Oh, God, yes, we mustn't. We simply couldn't. We mustn't.
We dare not.
You know? We dare not. Those fuckers. I mean, I hope within my lifetime, and I hope I live as long as the palm reader said I would, a ripe old age of 89, I hope that I can live long enough to see that there's never, ever going to be another Republican elected to any office at any level ever.
I don't think you're as old. I don't think you're as old as. I don't think you're doing. No, I don't think you're as old as Yoda. Because that's what we're talking about. Because there are way, way, way too many stupid people, and our prospects. And, you know, Bob, you're not helping by making fun of them. What else am I supposed to do? But
the prospects as much as you're. You're giving a true reading of what the fucking deal is, what the fuck is going on.
Yeah.
And if you can do that in an entertaining
the bottom line, Scott, is that it goes back to what I said a couple of weeks ago. I don't know. You know, it's one thing to deprogram little Timmy or little Susie when they get caught up with the Moonies, and that takes 6 weeks to a couple to 3 months, you know, in a cabin somewhere in the mountains by a trained professional. How do you deprogram however many million maggots?
Well, just recently.
I mean, how do you get people to acknowledge that there really isn't a blood-drinking pedophile sex cult in the basement of a pizza place that doesn't have a basement? How do you do that, Scott?
Well, I have an idea. It may not be the ultimate answer to your question, but certainly there is some percentage of those people just in the last 24 hours or maybe 36 hours, Attorney General Barr has gone from hero to damn near zero. Maybe not exactly.
Oh, no, he redeemed himself by explaining that bullshit Durham will continue to be a thorn in the side of the Biden administration for a foreseeable future, probably however long there's a Democrat in the White House. Oh, no, no, we need to expand the investigation. I mean, definitely need to expand it. Yeah. Hey, let me just take a moment to offer up some gratitude. Thank you to Kurt. My buddy Kurt up in North Dakota jumped in and took us down to 510 to go. And I got a note from Matt in San Francisco. And you got to pay attention. This is complicated. Conspiracy challenge. Since M is the 13th letter of the alphabet, and A is the first, and G is the seventh, and A is still the first, well, all that adds up to 22. Therefore, I offer up the official Matt in San Francisco's $25 hair dye flatulence challenge, because all those things are as closely related to whatever that woman was talking about as anything going before. So there's a $25 challenge on the table, and if that's met, we will get below the $500 mark, and that'll be huge. That'll take us down to 460 to go. Thank you so kindly.
Okay, did you put in my five yet? I haven't sent it, but I'll send it as soon as we
okay, so
off.
That's $20 to go on Matt's $25 hair dye flatulence challenge.
God.
And that'll get us, and like I said, that'll get us down to 460, and that's a big start. Another $160, and we'll be done with yesterday, because I had a note. From Dave number 11, fundraising today. Trying, Dave. So we're at 460 and trying to get down to where we're not having some sort of terrifying Friday on the front porch community made miracle. And I have to tell you, you got a note from our buddy Jug of Punch, because when you were doing all your mathematizing calculating there, well, Jug of Punch couldn't help note that Scott forgot pie. There's always room for pie.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And
how far out does pie go? If I recall, it's infinity. Isn't
yeah,
it?
And beyond. Infinity and beyond, just like Buzz Lightyear.
Oh, my. 3.14, and that's as far as I ever got.
Oh, God, you're going to make me do that, aren't you? Wait a minute. Oh, shit.
I remember when pi was
3.141. Shit. 3.14. 5. There's a 5 in there. 3.1415. I always hated fucking around with pi because I never got a decent number out of it. But, they have not built a computer yet that can calculate pi to a final digit, and most mathematicians will tell you it's because it doesn't have one. So, yeah. Oh, and David in South Carolina said, subject line, I ain't getting no vaccine. I heard a lady in a grocery store parking lot saying it. I ain't getting no vaccine. My kids ain't neither. Of course, she wasn't wearing a mask, so she may not live long enough to get the vaccine.
Jesus.
Well, I don't know if he could take the vaccine because, you know, holes in his hands. It might leak out the holes in his hands.
Have I?
Wait a minute.
Have I?
I'm giving myself a cowbell for that, damn it.
Have I talked to you since I got a package from my insurance company?
No.
I don't.
That's not a euphemism.
No. You know, I heard this thud on the front steps, and I looked out there. I wasn't expecting a package, and I thought it was for the lady next door. Let me tell you what all was in this fucker. Floss picks. A pack of 10 face masks. Honey lemon cough drops.
Well, as Slim Pickens said in Dr. Strangelove, hell, a fella can have a pretty good time in Vegas on this.
A big thing of hand sanitizer. Pardon me. A little thing of hand sanitizer for a pocket or a purse. A toothbrush. A digital thermometer. A box of a carton with the tube in it of toothpaste. Some chapstick. And a box of heavy-duty waterproof Band-Aids. No condoms. No English-Russian phrase dictionary and Bible.
No $200. No $200 in gold.
No, certainly not that. But it just—I'd knock me for a loop, Bob. I mean, I guess this time of year when they're trying to get people to re-up with their Medicare package or whatever, well, even if I was entertaining thoughts of switching, I'm not going to switch now. And maybe that's the whole idea. I don't know.
Yeah. I'll tell you one thing. We're paying attention, Scott.
What? December 7th can't get here soon enough because that's the last day in this cycle that you can choose your provider for the coming year. If I see another fucking commercial with Joe Namath telling me about the benefits of his particular brand of Medicaid, Medicare add-on, I'm going to throw – I don't have
– Well, apparently – I don't know. Apparently it covers knees.
Well, no, I was thinking about that. Show me your knees there, Joe. Tell me about that grand coverage. You know, and you cannot turn on a television – I should count them in these last days and in a typical hour on a typical channel that I watch. Every fucking break has at least one of these, you know, and I've never called the number to talk to anybody because I don't deal with third parties. I deal with the government or my current carrier, and that's who I deal with. I'll call you occasionally, of course, but I don't know.
And what you call me in your off time, well, you know, we won't go into that.
No, I like you. I've always liked you.
I know. It's a joke.
But getting back to Rudy, I'm so tired of him. I am tired of these other idiots. I'm tired of Trump. I'm just tired. I'm just tired, Bob. Thank God Biden prevailed in the election.
Oh, you haven't been watching it? No, but he didn't.
I definitely won.
Stop it. Just stop it right now. Don't you start. If I wanted this, I'd call my younger brother down in Florida and let him... I dare not. I mean, because he loves his Mark Levin. Oh, and I'll probably let you go so that somebody else can get
in. Yeah, I got somebody waiting. So,
but real quick, just to close on this, I sent you an email to this effect. Back in the 80s, when I lived in Kansas City, for a couple of elections, I volunteered as a poll worker at my little place where you vote around the corner from where I was living. And you've got a Democratic poll worker, and you've got a Republican poll worker. And the sure. little ladies or whoever walk up to the table, and they show their little voting card, and then you open the book to their name, and they run their finger down the page, and they sign on the line, and then they're given a ballot, and they're pointed in the direction of a little booth to vote, okay? So I've been a poll watcher. I know what did she call it, the poll book? I think we had a different name for it, but yeah, she called it the poll book. So I have a sense of how that operates when it's operating correctly. Now, in the run-up to Election Day, did not at every opportunity Trump and his people talk about the illegitimacy of mail-in voting? And didn't they all say to a person on Election Day, don't mail in a ballot? Go in person. So at whatever upper Michigan precinct this was, there were primarily Republicans voting there. So if there were any shenanigans, who were they on behalf of? Do you get
And see, I think one of the reasons that they're so pissed off at the Secretary of State in Georgia is because he had the temerity to point out that if Donald Trump had not spent so much time telling people not to mail their ballots in, not to absentee vote.
I saw that
he would have won Georgia, because the disparity between people who voted, the Republicans who voted in the primary by absentee ballot and those who did not vote in the general by absentee ballot, was the margin of victory.
And have any of these people even attempted, even if they're lying, to address the question, how is it that the voter fraud pertained only to Trump and not the Republican senator who was running, or the Republican House member who was running?
Right, or the general, or the general devious cleverness of the Democrats to steal from Donald Trump, but somehow manage to lose seats in the House and not control the Senate.
Yeah,
I mean that is truly a Three Stooges approach to election fraud. But the thing is, and you, I don't know if you know this, we have found some voter fraud, Scott. Real live voter fraud, no kidding, the real deal. And by the way, thank you to Dave number 11, and thank you to Ralphs. Ralph said if somebody kicked in another 10, she'd kick in another 10. So actually we're down to 440 now, thanks to Dave number 11 and Ralphs. And that's freaking awesome. So, and that, by the way, I'll remind people, is Sparky's least favorite voltage. He hates 440. So, but no, we really did. I'm not kidding. I'm not blowing smoke at you. We found some voter fraud. And lo and behold, it's the real deal. And it happened in Georgia. Because a lawyer down there did a Facebook video, lawyer by the name of Bill Price, and he went on Facebook Live, and he said, "I'd love to tell you that there are legal avenues." I'm not kidding, okay?
Yeah, I'm on the edge of my chair here. This is
a lawyer, you know, licensed by the state of Florida and everything. I'd love to tell you that there are legal avenues for success in the courts, but as a realist and as a lawyer myself, I know that's just not going to happen, Price told the GOP gathering. He went on to tell the group that he, by God, was going to move to his brother's address in Hiram, Georgia, and that he was going to register to vote in the special runoff. He even goes so far as to give his brother's name and his brother's address.
Oh, my.
The other Republicans are taking notes, and you can hear in the background the maggots murmuring the information. And one woman says, "We can truly register at that address?" And Bill Price, the lawyer in Florida, says, "Sure! Have some mail sent there to show you're moving. And it can be anywhere in the state of Georgia you can register." No, that's another woman. "So if you've got cousins, dogs, cats that live somewhere else, it doesn't need to be one particular county?" "Yep," says Bill Price, the lawyer. "This is going to be a statewide election on January 5th. I'm going to be voting for Kelly Loeffler and David Perdue." Another woman asks about the deadline for registering, and he says, you know, Monday, and Bill Price answers, "It can be done online, or you can request your ballot at your new address in Georgia by mail. You just go to the Secretary of State's website for the state of Georgia and register to vote there." Then he says, "Well, I'm going to get me a Georgia driver's license. I'm going to have mail sent to my brother's house." And he says, "We have to win that election in Georgia. And so I'm moving to my brother's house in Hiram, Georgia, and I'm registering to vote. We're going to win that election in January. That's what needs to be done. If you don't want to do it, fine. Might as well move to Venezuela now. Get used to that lifestyle, because that's what's coming." Because, you know, I mean, Joe Biden, Venezuelan socialism, same thing.
No, he's looking at it wrong, Bob. Go to Venezuela and get you a high-paying job. in tech support for the voting machines.
Right. There's that too. But here's the punchline. Since this information got out, the Deputy Secretary of State of Georgia, Jordan Fuchs, said they're investigating Bill Price now for fraudulent voter registration, which is in fact a felony. He said, and you're going to love this. You're going to love his explanation, Jordan Fuchs. We can tell how he votes. This isn't California. We actually investigate and seek to prosecute individuals who try to vote here illegally. Our system is built to prevent this here behavior. We'll seek to prosecute to the fullest extent of the law. And so then, WSB Atlanta.
Cool. Nice to meet you too.
I'm sorry. Am I interrupting?
No, I was out front picking up a package, and my neighbor said hello.
Oh, okay. So WSB Atlanta got in touch with Bill Price down in Florida. And he said, I did not change my voter registration, and I don't have 2 million roommates. But if my humorous comments bring attention to the massive and widespread voter fraud in Georgia, I'd submit to you that that's a good thing. Here's the problem. Bill Price did, in fact, register to vote. He did it on November the 8th. He used his brother's address in Hiram, Georgia, and swore on an affidavit that he was a Georgia resident and eligible to vote. The Paulding County Election Supervisor, Deidre Holden, said, we clearly know he's not eligible to vote. And so, you know, he's in the deep stuff.
So when he said it, he was joking, but when he did it, he was serious, or is it the other way around?
He was never joking. I've got it on the wrong machine. I could play the audio. It's not like he's saying, you know, nudge, nudge, wink, wink, or yuck, 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 ha, 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 ha. He's deadly serious.
Yeah, well, see, that's their easy out. Everything that they've ever said.
Well, it's the Limbaugh defense. It's the Limbaugh defense, Scott. My friends, yes, I did tell a man to call. I did tell an African American man to call me back when he took the bone out of his nose. But you must understand, this is an entertainment program, and I am a comedian. Ha 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 ha. That's been his get out of jail free card for 40 years.
Yeah.
So I guess this would be the place if I was DJing, this would be the place where I cue up Rod Stewart singing, "I Was Only Joking, My Dear."
Yeah. So what's going to happen to Mr. Price? Now, did you say he's a lawyer?
Yes, he's a lawyer.
Oh, well, that doesn't, depending on how this plays out, that may not bode well for his future endeavors in the legal profession.
I would guess not.
I mean, I'm not one, and I don't play one on TV, but you know, I do have a few viable brain cells to bang together, and even I can figure this out. There's a Chinese proverb, "May you live in interesting times," and we don't know if it's a blessing or a curse, but we're certainly here, Bob.
Oh,
we're certainly here. We have got ringside fucking seats. You know?
Yeah.
And sometimes I'm sorry that at a flip of a switch, a flip of any number of switches in this household, that I can get news of any flavor. I mean, 30, you talk about Baskin Robbins 31 flavors, 131, 1,031 flavors of news from any place on the planet. But the problem is, a lot of it I don't want to hear. A sponge can only soak up a certain. There's probably some ratio or some equation of how much a sponge can take in before it's saturated. And that, you know, kind of touches upon my absence. And hopefully it'll turn around. Hopefully I will have recovered to the point where I can, on a more regular basis, deal with, you know, the conversation. Because I like being part of it. I truly do, but not at the expense of, you know, my well-being. And maybe that's a selfish thing. I mean, see, where I'm living, I'm an intelligent young person, young man in my own mind. I'm 66 chronologically, but I'm still that vibrant 19-year-old that I always was in my heart and in my soul and
spinning,
my mind.
Spinning
and,
cool jazz classics.
That's right. You know, but, I mean, I'm still that rabble-rousing kid who marched and flipped down Pennsylvania Avenue in 69 and flipped off J. Edgar Hoover, who was looking down at us as a half million of us walked past his office. Okay? So, I mean, you know, I have the good fortune of living in California, okay? I have the good fortune of having insurance, and not only having insurance, but having a company unbidden sends me a care package, literally a fucking care package that will contribute to my continued well-being, you know? So I'm fortunate in where I live. I'm fortunate that I'm a lifelong Democrat, and God knows they've broken my heart a time or two over the years, okay? And I'm fortunate that more often than not, I'm an optimist, you know, even if it has tinges of realism in it. But I you know, not too long ago found myself saying, you know, is this going to work out? You know, are my expectations going to be realized? Because there for a while, there's still, what, 44 more days where literally anything can happen. I forget which day of the week on the Mickey Mouse Club was anything can happen day. But now every fucking day is anything can happen day.
Yes, it is.
You know?
Right.
So it just troubles me. You know, and I would hope that at least, getting back to the thing about will they ever learn, that at least some fraction of the people who thought everything was just tickety-boo with him and Mitch McConnell and the rest of them, that at least some sliver of people will replay that and say, yeah, we fucked that one up real good, and let's not do that anymore. You know, because that's where the progress occurs. So hopefully on that happy note, that will inspire people to kick in some bucks to the horn tonight, as I will do when I hang up. And if you can, do whatever you can to support Warnock and Ossoff in Georgia. Because the work's not done yet. Normally, we get it done by Election Day, and then you make our way through in normal times to Inauguration Day. Well, we don't have that luxury this time. You know, 15 days before Inauguration Day, it's the 5th, isn't it? January 5th? Yeah, it's a special election.
Right.
15 days before Inauguration Day, we've still got one monumental task to do. And those of us who are not legal voters in Georgia, and I hope Mr. Price is listening, you know, on our side, we have got some heavy lifting to do. And if we can't do it there as legal voters, we've got to find creative ways to support the people of Georgia and support President-elect Biden and Vice President-elect Harris, because their job, the lifting that those two people have got to do over the next 4 years, is a monumental task. And we have got to put our backs into it in whatever way we can. And part of it is through this program. Part of it is through getting those two candidates elected in Georgia. And part of it is just being present and in the conversation and in, you know, just staying in the know over these next 4 years and writing our two senators and writing our representative in the House and just staying with it. Because we see what happens when we slough off. Not to say that we have sloughed off, but if we are not as vigilant as dogs with sharp teeth, they will take every advantage they can grab. And we can't let that happen again. So that's my epistle, Brother Bob.
And much appreciated it is.
Will be available on cassette tape in the lobby for a love gift.
A love offering. Love. Yes, absolutely.
Yes. All right, man.
You take care of yourself. I'm glad to have heard from you.
I will. And my best to our Horn family. And I'll talk to you between now and the holidays. But get out there and be careful as you shop for that loved one, for that bargain. They're not going to be – there wasn't any camping out in front of Best Buy this year that I was able to see. Or were there some stupid people who did that?
Not yet. But, hey, Scott, I'm gonna disconnect because somebody else is trying to reach on this line, all right?
Okay, man. Take care.
All right. Later.
See ya.
Later. And so I think we're connected, and you are next in line behind Richard. Oh, and before I go to Richard, one thing real quick, like, Suman said, logic. Just an observation about Scott's comment on that moron from Lansing. See, the problem is Scott's talking logically about voter fraud. Maggots don't have the word logic in their dictionary. Here in Phoenix, the maggots are wearing masks that don't cover their noses. The masks say, I can't breathe. Imagine that. Then these idiots happily take off their masks when they have to talk as if it's some sort of inconvenience to these asswipes. Last week, a friend of mine told me that there was a maggot in a grocery store walking around with an automatic weapon with a T-shirt that says, ask me to wear a mask. Again, total lack of logic. Well, yeah, there's not, if you check into the neurological sciences, you'll find that there's not a hell of a lot of higher reasoning and logical thinking that takes place in the amygdala. And we already know that the amygdala is enlarged in right-wingers the world over. They literally live on their lizard brains. Yeah. Yeah, I'm not kidding. And so That kind of makes a little bit of sense, I hope. And again, thanks to Dave number 11 and Ralphs for answering Matt's challenge. That was a heck of a challenge, Matt. The $25 hair dye flatulence challenge. We've never had one of those, so thank you. And we're down to 440 to go, $140 to go to finish up with yesterday's program. So that's awesome. And by the way, David in South Carolina, Stan, provided a little bit of guidance. We now know who the Victoria Jackson wannabe is. Her name is Melissa. That's Melissa with two L's and two S's. Melissa Carone. And she's an actress. An out-of-work one. I mean, that's pretty much the default position for most actors and actresses. But she's an actor and a model and an independent IT contractor. And she's a Lulu and a judge, actually, in Michigan before she ever spoke at this oversight hearing. A judge found her, quote, simply not credible. It's, I mean, she went off on a diatribe about being upset about having to park in a parking lot. And then she talked about how there was a shuttle. And, yeah, she says that Democrats are why she hasn't been hired in the past 4 weeks. Well, I can't even get an actual job anymore. And there's still an open question as to whether that's a Michigan accent or an 80 proof accent. But yeah, and she and Rudy Giuliani have been swanning around a bit on the Michigan circuit, the Michigan Commission. never mind. It used to, it was an old parody song that I did years ago. I'm going to leave that alone. But hey, let's go over and talk to Richard. Hey, Richard.
Hey, Bob. How are you doing?
You know, I'm okay. You know, we had Scott, who's an old jazz DJ, and now we got a classical DJ.
Yeah. Well, I never thought of it as being a DJ, but I suppose it's what I did.
Were you playing anyway, music? Were you playing recorded music on the radio?
Oh yes, from turntables for sure.
Yeah, you're a DJ.
Good turntables, nice turntables.
You know, disc jockey.
The brand name. Yeah, the brand name was QRK. That was quite nice.
Oh, that's what I started on QRKs at the Gospel Voice, but ours were very not nice. They were very old, and I said our QRKs came over on the ARK.
Well, I mean, my station had a couple of Girard record changers in a closet, and I wonder what the hell were they doing there. I mean, that's pretty crappy stuff. I mean, the regular consumer Girards, awful machines. Well, I'm talking, you know, speaking about masks, I just finished my physical therapy today, the last session. And I've been going to a little clinic here in my town that's part of a national chain of physical therapy clinics. It's rather well equipped. And I think the people are pretty good there. My main physical therapist came down with COVID.
Oh, no.
And I saw her today. She's back at work. And she said it was no fun. I'm glad. I mean, she's younger, of course, a lot younger than I am. But I don't know. There's a lot of people who won't wear masks in this town, and I'm scared to go shopping, frankly. I mean, for food.
Well, it's like what Paul from Parts Unknown said. If you're around people who are wearing masks, don't get within 10 feet of them. If you're around people who aren't wearing masks, don't get within a country mile of them.
Well, I gotta eat, you know. Gotta go out there and buy food.
But doesn't Food City have a thing where you, like an app or whatever, where you can put your order in and then sit in the parking lot and they bring it to you?
Well, boy, I tell you, my mother taught me to be a good shopper. I mean, she was a pretty difficult woman, but you know, I got that and atheism from her. So she did something right, you know. I'm a good shopper, so I like to go in there and, you know, squeeze the tomatoes and stuff. And for me, it's very hard. I have to trust somebody else to buy the tomatoes for me.
Well, when being a good shopper runs headlong into avoiding the Rona, I would like to hope, Richard, that avoiding the Rona wins with you.
It does. It does. But I mean, I'm pulling my hair out because, you know, while I was unable to go shopping at all a few months ago, other people did the job for me. And it cost me so much more money to have other people shop. You know?
Yeah, but the grocery stores have actual programs. I know Walmart has it. I don't know about Food City because I'm not, you know, I don't have one near me. But I can't imagine that they don't. As nice as the stores are, I'll bet you that Ingles does.
Yeah, that's a good point. I'll look into that. Thank you for reminding me, because you know, I've been feeling really put upon. The farm that's behind me changed hands, and I met the people who bought it. You know, pretty nice folks. In fact, they are from Trenton, New Jersey, by way of California, and you know, they really sound like from Jersey, you know. And I went walking with the woman yesterday, and everything was fine until I complained about COVID to her and people refusing to wear masks. And then she told me, oh, well, you don't understand that only 1% of the people are seriously affected. And I'm going, oh, my God. I got one of these people. So I got to watch who I talk to around here.
Yeah, I think anyway, you do. And you got to watch who you walk with. I hope that'll be your last walk with her.
Boy, I don't know. Yeah. I mean, I was glad to meet some. The thing about this town is that people like to move here from other places, and the most interesting people are from elsewhere. I don't know exactly why, but it's attractive to people. And
well, probably because land is relatively cheap.
I think that's part of it, and it's pretty, you know.
And you know, Tennessee doesn't have what, a personal income tax?
They do not, but they sure as hell have sales taxes, man.
Yeah,
they make up for it. They this is the only place I've ever lived that's, you know, taxed as food. That's unreal. When I lived in Connecticut, they didn't even tax clothing because they considered clothing to be a necessity. That's the difference. So, well, anyway, I called about something else. Anyway,
okay.
You know, I've been a solid left-wing, liberal, progressive, et cetera, person since I was, you know, old enough to think at all. And I was on, as I've mentioned to you a while back, I was on some protest demonstrations and marches when I was a teenager. And it came to me that they often don't work. You know, that the protest sometimes backfires. As a matter of fact, it backfires often. And so I was on a Zoom meeting with the atheists in Knoxville last Tuesday. This is the informal meeting. And I've met a couple of people here, one of them at the meeting last Tuesday, who are the very aggressive left-wing types. I mean, the kind that go to demonstrations and break windows and stuff like that. And when I say demonstrations backfire, that's what I'm talking about. Because the way they backfire in my life has been what plays in the press the next day about that demonstration. And what the press tends to do is they glom on to the bad behavior of the Black Bloc, for instance, or these ladies.
Right, and that's who gets all the press, especially from the right-wing
media. Exactly.
Exactly,
and they get all the press. And, you know, even I've even seen The Guardian do it, man. It's like they'll focus on the bad behavior of these people, and they even forget what the demonstration was about. And so when I say backfire, that's what I'm talking about. So my issue here is, what are we trying to do? You know, and are we achieving it? You know? So now this woman very articulately pointed out to me that, in fact, the violence works, and it's good to do it because it achieves results, and used Portland, Oregon as an example, which I don't know a thing about this, really. You know, they said, in other words, that the officials will give you what you want if you make life uncomfortable enough for them.
But as Gandhi proved, Richard, you can make life uncomfortable for government without engaging in violence.
Well, see, her response to that, somebody else brought that up, and her response was that, well, in fact, there was a lot of violence going on, but it just didn't get the press. So, you know, I don't think we're going to win this revolution, you know, by the techniques that were used against the Tsar in Russia in 1918. You know, this ain't going to work. A very uncomfortable amount of Americans were seduced by Donald Trump last time around. He got a hell of a lot of traction. Enough people here hated on Hillary Clinton so much that they voted for a man who would be the dictator of the United States.
And they hated and despised her because a 25-year campaign against her, funded entirely by the right wing, worked.
I think you're right. You know, I remember walking into Costco in California. What was it, 25 years ago when Clinton was president? And I saw my first.
It'll be 30 years in 2023.
Well, okay, about then, I walked into Costco and I saw my first anti-Hillary book for sale. So it goes, you know, that's my first observation of the anti-Hillary machine at work. And, I mean, well, fascism is alive and well. I'm really aware of that now that I'm in the Bible Belt. You know.
Oh, yeah. Remember the old adage, when fascism comes to America, it will come wrapped in a flag and carrying a cross.
I think I heard a Bible, but, you know, it's the same thing. It's the same thing. And, it's funny. One of the demonstrations I went on I was a teenager, was called the Youth March for Integrated Schools. So we all got on chartered buses in New York City, and we went down to Washington, D.C., which is a pretty miserable trip on the highways. And the only reporters, we had a lot of people out there on that mall with the big spike on it. What's that called? The Washington Monument. And the only reporters I saw there were from the foreign press, not a single American reporter there. And those reporters were, I chatted with a couple of them, pretty cool. So I came back to New York and, demonstration was over. We got on the buses, went back to New York, right? Next day, I bought every single newspaper in New York City, except the Brooklyn Eagle. I think I didn't buy that. So at that time, when I was, 17 years old, there were 8 newspapers in New York City. I bought all 8 of them. And 7 of them didn't mention us at all. The 8th one, the World Telegram and Sun, said, the Youth March for Integrated Schools, a communist-inspired organization, blah, 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 blah. So that's the press we got, And when I was in radio, I was working in Springfield, Massachusetts, and talking to 20,000 people. I was there on the weekends. So I worked an 8-hour shift Saturday, and I worked an 8-hour shift on Sunday. I was the main person on duty. And we had a United Press International teletype machine. Did you work on at a station which had a teletype machine?
Yes. I mean,
which machine was it? Do you remember?
We had UPI. I mean, I've worked at various stations.
Yeah.
But the one I remember was my. You always remember your first. And this one was this one was UPI. It took the great big heavy yellow rolls of foolscap. Changing the ribbon was an exercise in becoming covered in ink and still failing.
I never had to do that.
And it had to sit in a soundproofed room because it was so loud that you really couldn't broadcast open a mic when it was ding. And it was made out of sheet iron, and probably weighed every bit of a ton or more.
Big sucker, and loud as hell. I mean, ours was in a closet, and away from the studio. And thank God I never had to change the ribbon in the damn thing. It always printed Z's instead of E's. By the way, machine.
Fun. Now, eventually, I work at stations that got the little quiet humming teeny tiny dot matrix printers.
That's cool.
And it, yeah. But by the time I got to CNN Radio, the printer we had when we would print our scripts out every evening, that thing was actually bigger than the old UPI teletype. It wasn't as noisy, but it was probably every bit as heavy.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
What principle did it work on?
I think, you know, we're talking about 1986, 87. I think that's too early for laser. It was dot matrix on that tractor fed fan folded paper.
Yes, yes, yes. Well, gee, I remember that yellow stuff, and I used to think that that's why there was yellow journalism, you know, so printed on that stuff. And I edited my, you know, most people, I think in radio, most people just rip 5-minute newscasts out of the machine and read them verbatim. I didn't do that. I edited everything.
I'd rip and read. But by the time I got to CNN, you were expected, because see, we had, I mean, it was a big damn deal, you know. CNN Center had opened in Atlanta at the former Omni, and this is pre-internet, but we had, I mean, it's kind of pre-internet, I guess it was proto-internet or something, because there was a triple redundancy set of mainframes that handled all the news feeds in, and we couldn't rip and read, because what we were expected to do was take AP, UPI, Agence France-Presse, Reuters, and then things like the Washington Post and the New York Times, all of these things, and we were supposed to come up with a news story that tried to objectively, digest information and resolve conflicts in reporting. I mean, we were deadly serious about our work.
And yes, so, and I appreciate that.
And so it would take about, let's see, I was a smoker back then, so the newscast was 5 minutes with a minute and a half of ads. And you get done with your newscast, and you go and smoke a cigarette and then you come back, because, you know, you're kind of organizing your thoughts for the next hour.
Yes.
And so by the time you get back, it's a quarter past the hour, and if you're working tops, then you've got essentially 40 minutes to bang out 3.5 minutes of news, which is harder than it sounds.
I can appreciate that. I used to make what you call a stack. You know, I made my own stack. You know, I would cut that 5-minute newscast into strips of paper and stick them in front of me and read from those. And I would put local stories in there too. But being a classical station, there were stories that we didn't do. So the policy was no car crashes, no shootings, no stabbings, you know. And sometimes the shootings and the stabbings and the car crashes, that was all the news there was.
Yeah, well, if it bleeds, it leads.
If it bleeds, it leads.
But this was, but at CNN, at CNN, that was back in the day when Ted Turner still owned it lock, stock, and barrel. And we did it his way. And he didn't care how much money he lost. He was, by God, going to have a Mandarin fluent, Ivy League educated reporter in Beijing. And he was going to have, he was going to have a highly educated, Spanish speaking reporter who actually came in and out of Cuba and covered, you know, Central America, Mexico, you know, She flew all over the place,
But Ted Turner,
And Ted Turner insisted on having real reporters on every continent and having them be at least fluent, if not local. And we, and generated our own news.
So it sounds like you respected this man.
Oh, he was a hero of mine.
Ah. Okay. Well,
he was larger than life, and intelligent as hell, richer than God. These were the pre Jane Fonda days, and he would his private pilot was a beautiful woman who was, I swear, 6 feet plus tall, and you know, for a young, 22-23 year old news anchor, you just swoon when she walked into the room. She was exquisite, and she could fly jets. What's not to swoon over? He ran it well, and then he fucked up and sold out and sold it to Time Warner, and then they screwed him over and he wound up losing editorial control. But he did. He invented the 24-hour day news cycle. And it was a good idea.
And what year was this? When was this? 86,
87, 88.
Okay. See, I was doing this in 1966, 1967. And a lot of things were different. Plus, it was a classical music format. And so a lot of differences. But let me get back to my subject of protest demonstrations and media. If I may. Okay.
Sure.
Yeah. Okay. So, I was living in New York City and fighting off the draft at the time. So, and that was a pretty much a full-time operation for me. To be a conscientious objector during the Vietnam period was not an easy thing. And you had to have a watertight legal case to really pull it off. So I was working on that. And you had to have a religious reason. And I had been, involved with ethical culture, which is actually chartered as a religion in New York State. So I was working from a perspective from that point of view. And it had to be equivalent to the belief of a religious person, and God knows what they got from their religion. So I had to do some fancy writing, and it was taking up all my weekdays. On the weekend, and I was living on Riverside Drive West in a huge apartment house facing the Hudson River, facing New Jersey, across the Hudson River. So Saturday morning, I'd get in my car, which was in the garage under the apartment house, like a 21-story apartment house, with three levels of garages underneath. Get in my car, and I would drive all the way up to Springfield, Massachusetts, and put in my weekend on the air, and then come back home. Part of my pay was a hotel room. The radio station was in a hotel, and we plugged the hotel with every station break that we did. And so the radio station got play money from Sheraton. And so I stayed in a hotel room overnight with that play money. And that's how it worked. So one day, my mother went on a protest march. So she went up to the Port Authority bus terminal uptown and got on a chartered bus with a bunch of people and headed west to Washington, D.C. This is a protest against the Vietnam War. I got in my car, and I drove in the other direction up to Springfield, Massachusetts. Where this gets interesting, was that there were reports coming out of Washington, D.C. on the wire on UPI about the protest demonstration. Now, I didn't read any of those stories on the air. I don't even remember if they were mentioned in the Rip and Read newscasts. But I saved all the teletype, all the yellow paper. I put it in the suitcase, and there were a lot of stories about this demonstration. I don't know why. But, you know, I put yards of paper in my suitcase.
I saved all of the copy. I was on air the night that John Lennon was murdered. And, of course, we're coming up on the anniversary of that. And I saved all my copy of that, and it's I think it's probably still in a box somewhere.
Wow. I didn't save any of this stuff. But what I did was I went home with the yellow journalism, and then I read it to my mother. You know, I said, "Did you see this?" And I would read to her. She said, "No." She would say, "Yeah, I did see that, but this is how it happened." You know, and it was very interesting to compare what she saw with how it came across after it had been edited, and, you know, at the wire service. Because I trust reporters, actually, in general. I just have this gut sense that these are the guys out in the trenches, and the women, of course. And I think I trust them. I tend to trust them. But they'll be honest. I don't trust the editors so much. What do you think?
Oddly enough, I was about to say that it's the editors I worry about, because the reporter's just out gathering basic facts. It's the editor who says, well, play it this way, or don't mention this, or don't mention that.
Right. Then he does this after the story comes in front of him, right?
Yeah. Or not always, though, because, you know, there's also, there's different kinds of editors. There's a managing editor. There's an assignments editor. And the assignments editor sends various reporters to their various locations. And the assignments editor says, go and look for this or that.
Yes.
And that determines the direction of what the reporting will be before the fact. And then the story comes through, and the after-the-fact editor shapes it. I mean, for instance, when they book, say, you know, when they book somebody on, you know, we'll use my filthy morning habit as an example. When they book somebody on Morning Joe, they'll tell them what they want to talk about. And they will direct, the producer will direct the tenor of the conversation before it ever happens.
What network is Morning Joe on?
MSNBC.
Okay.
And it's even more so when you're talking about a Fox News TV radio Rwanda. Because, you know.
Yeah, I've heard that.
If there was a story out there about Barack Obama saving a kitten from a tree, Fox News reporters know to make it about, why didn't Barack Obama save the kitten from the tree sooner?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
And we are about to be, and that's one of the, not that it's a downside. I don't want to be misunderstood, but that we're about to be inundated with that filth, because the for-profit media is the for-profit media because they are driven by the need to make money. The for-profit media only work if they are able to deliver eyeballs to advertisers.
Exactly, exactly.
And they can say, "Well, you know, we have impeccable journalistic ethics."
and the sales department never has any kind of an interface with the editorial aspects of the news division.
But you just let the talent on air say something negative about an advertiser or a potential advertiser, and I don't care if it's small market radio or major national network. Somebody's ass will be on the carpet answering for it. If you've ever seen Good Night and Good Luck, Clooney movie about Edward R. Murrow. You know, Edward R. Murrow went round and round with management because management wanted to make sure that the advertisers were happy.
Of course.
And so, you know, if you run negative stories, you run the risk of reporting yourself right out of a damn job.
Exactly. Well, let me get back to my original topic here.
Sure.
About demonstrations, because I wanted to live in Berkeley, by the way, but I never could do it. I lived near Berkeley, you know, I always had a soft spot for Pacifica Radio, you know, Pacifica's headquartered in Berkeley. And I used to listen to Pacifica's station in New York City, in fact. And that informed the way I did news a lot of the time. So, why don't I bring this up? I was watching Berkeley, naturally, because there's a lot of protests in Berkeley, and protests in Oakland, too, right next door to Berkeley. And, you know, there's a lot of violence at these protests, especially in Oakland. Oakland's got some pretty tough cops, really mean, you know. And there'd be a lot of, you know, black bloc people busting store windows and stuff like that. And I'm going, you know, I'm just watching this. Like, oh, my God, this house is going to play in the press. They're just destroying whole movements with activity like this. And there was one protest which happened during the daytime, during, a, you know, like a weekday, maybe 4:30 in the afternoon. And they went out on Route 80 and blocked the freeway in rush hour, evening rush hour. And I'm going to myself, oh my God, and I'm imagining this scenario that you got this young woman who's driving home from work, got to get home because the babysitter's got to leave and be somewhere else, you know, by 6 o'clock, right? And she's late. And she comes to a screeching halt because people are running across the freeway. How's that young woman going to feel about the cause of that demonstration? What do you think?
Her initial response will be to despise them for inconveniencing her. But this is the essential, you know, whether it's people blocking a freeway or, frankly, this is the dilemma that labor organizations face when they get pushed to the point of striking. Because anyone inconvenienced by a striking worker will be inclined to blame the worker, and most of the media infrastructure will be more than happy to help them do it.
Exactly. That's really true. I have been a striker. I have been a picket captain, in fact. God, that's hard work.
Miserable work.
But
nobody's happy.
In the rain and San Francisco in the rain. Oh, my God. But anyway, getting back to this freeway situation. So I put that to a woman who I know who is a bit of a rabble rouser here in Tennessee. And I said, as my example of, don't do this. I mean, we need different tactics if we want to achieve a goal. We can't do it like this. And, you know, we've got to think about what's going to be the end result. And she, so I said, well, what do you think of this? I told her what I just told you about the freeway and the woman. And she said, well, good, it serves her right.
Aye.
Yeah, that's right. That was my reaction.
There was violence. You know, we mentioned Gandhi a little bit ago. There was violence that attended that. But it wasn't violence that was sanctioned or approved or initiated by Gandhi or the people who he was trying to lead. It was outside. It was actors outside those movements.
Yes, which somebody.
And at one point in time, you know, he fasted nearly to the point of death over the violence.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Oh boy. So, I mean, I keep thinking, as an organic atheist, which
we talked about.
Brought up before. Yeah, you know, it's like I'm going to meetings of atheists, which I enjoy. I enjoy being around these people a lot, and I'm going to meetings on Zoom with different atheist groups, and I realize it's a lonely spot for me because I'm the only person among them who actually grew up this way. All these other people are ex-Christians of one kind or another, and they have had to kind of like punch their way out of a paper bag, you know, to throw off the condition.
Well, no, look, there's a reason that I don't make the reference as much anymore as I used to, but I'm a recovering Southern Baptist.
I hear you.
Just like people say, you know, I'm a recovering alcoholic, I'm a recovering meth head, you know, whatever. I'm a recovering, and now I'm a recovering cigarette smoker. I will never be.
Are you?
Today is day 80 without a cigarette.
Oh, good for you, Bob.
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'll never.
That's a real hard step.
I'll never be over it. If I ever smoke again, I will be re-addicted. So I'm always in recovery. And what happens to you, like when you're raised in the Baptist Church in the South or other faiths that are other sects that are even worse, and I'll say it, the Church of Christ down there, and I know they're big where you live. You know, the people who won't even allow so much as a fucking kazoo in their church. They're hardcore, and you know they're the only ones going to heaven, and the Baptists and the Jew, the Baptists are right there with the Jews and the Muslims and the Hindus. We're all fucking pagans. God knows the Roman Catholics. But when you are raised, and it applies to almost any Christian denomination, but it's not nearly as pernicious, say if you're raised Whiskey Episcopal. Most of your decent Lutherans, some Presbyterians. But if you're raised Southern Baptist, if you're raised Church of Christ, Church of God, Church of God of Prophecy, Apostolic Holiness.
I call them all Baptoids.
Yeah, if you get away from it, you will spend a lifetime getting over it, because they do to you when you're little. And I'm not talking about being abused, sexually abused by a priest. That happens too, of course.
Yes.
Or a preacher or a minister. Yeah. What they do to you, they do to your mind.
Hmm.
And.
Well, to get. It takes
tremendous strength to reject those concepts of eternal torment and damnation and fear, because almost all Christianity rules by fear. Many, many years ago, I had a guy named Bishop Carlton Pearson on the program, and he came out of, I mean, he was a close disciple of Oral Roberts, and he lost everything when he announced to his flock that he had had his congregation, that he had had a revelation, and that there's no hell, and nobody's going to it. And they threw his ass out on the street and under the bus. Because, as he pointed out, all of these sects, all these denominations, all these religions, they rule by fear. They start you out down in the nursery talking about how sweet and loving, you know, Jesus loves the little children. But it doesn't take long before you're hearing about the burning fires of hell. They usually start in on that just before you hit puberty. And
oh, that late?
Oh. Well, I mean, we're working on it. But, you know, they really ramp it up as adolescence comes on, because they know that's when they start losing people. Now, I was done when I was 18. And then I went to college and studied religion, and I was like, yep, I was right.
So did you have to wrestle with logic yourself? I mean, with like if you're throwing off an addiction, was it a fight? Was it a struggle?
The quitting smoking is still a struggle.
I mean, religion was throwing off Christianity.
It was internally. It was tough because my father never made a big deal out of religion, but he believed. He wasn't a churchgoer. He didn't think much of ministers. He didn't think preachers should be paid. He worked with a guy on the furnace who was a preacher. He preached on Sunday and he worked on the furnace Monday through Friday. And he said, you know, I don't agree with it. I don't agree with his preaching, but I at least agree with the way he goes about it. He despised the really popular local meteorologist out of Huntsville because he, at the close of every weather report on Friday, he'd say, and don't forget to go to church on Sunday. And my dad would rail, it is not his business to tell me to go to church. That's my decision. It's his business to tell me whether or not it's going to rain. My mother, however, was devout and studious, and so was my grandmother. And they studied the Bible morning, noon, and night. And my real breakup with God came when I watched my devoted, God-fearing, servant of Christ grandmother devolve into Alzheimer's and dementia. This brilliant mind, she was a brilliant woman. And by the time it was at the end, she was so far out of her mind that when my mother would put her to bed every night, she would spend the rest of the night screaming, oh, Jesus, please help me. Jesus, save me. And Jesus never did. And that's when I broke up with God.
How old were you when that happened?
I was in my mid-teens up into my, say, sophomore, junior year of college. I remember coming down from Morgantown. I was in college at West Virginia when she died.
Yeah.
And she's just buried out the road here. But at that point in time, I just kind of said, you know, if this deity is real, and if this deity will let that happen to one of his servants, who has worked and given to others and done everything you want, everything a god could want, and that's her reward? Nope.
Yes.
Pass, thanks.
You know, I think about this in relation to all those Jewish people that got bumped off by the Nazis and everybody else.
Well, yeah, that's Elie Wiesel writing Night Mother. You know, talking about because he's asking the question, how can the God of the Jews exist and allow this to happen? The Holocaust.
Exactly. Yeah. Or how can the same God exist and allow the Jews to treat the Arabs the way they do in Israel? You know,
yeah,
in Israel.
And I'm sorry, mysterious are the ways of the Lord. Don't cut it anymore.
That's just
another way of saying, you know, don't ask questions, kid.
So I have to have compassion for these people in Knoxville, you know, who wrestle. I'm thinking they wrestle with the conditioning in their own minds a lot.
Sure.
If you're talking as an addiction. And they wrestle with other people, with logic. There's a lot of wrestling with logic. And because I don't come from that background.
I don't think, Richard, I don't think I could, this isn't Prayer Meeting Wednesday, but I love these conversations. I don't think I could ever be a full-blown atheist. I could never be an atheist. I could never be a full-blown atheist. I could never be an atheist who goes to meetings. Because that's too organized. I am not so full of my own hubris that I can say without doubt that there is no rhyme or reason to the universe. For all I know, the universe.
Oh, this is tough.
For all I know, and you know, I'm kind of content with this. When I think about the scope of the universe and the fact that the physicists now say there are multiple universes that they lay against each other like pages in a book, but just like any page in any book is different from any other page, every universe is different from every other. That's what the physicists say. And so, I from time to time when I'm feeling kind of, philosophical or metaphysical, I'm content to think that human beings are driven by a profound hubris. And, you know, the trick with hubris is it always winds up biting you in the ass. You know, just ask the ancient Greeks.
My internal vision just jumps to Donald Trump when you say that. I'm waiting. Waiting to see him get that.
Look, there's no good end. You know, Julius Caesar, the night before he was murdered, the symposium conversation around the dinner table was, what is the best way to die? And instead of saying, Jesus, you people, because there was no Jesus yet, you know, or just, you know, you people, you know, what a topic. He participated, and everyone's, well, you know, I'd rather be stabbed than burned. And it comes around to Caesar, and Caesar is reported to have said, it matters not the manner, only that it be quick. And the next day, he would be killed in a way that was anything but quick. Stabbed repeatedly, over and over and over again. And one of the first autopsies in recorded human history said he would have survived every blow except the final one. And so when I'm feeling kind of philosophical, I like to think that that every living being on this planet is sort of equal to each other. And that actually sort of jives with the Jains, that all life is sacred. I take it a step further. I take it a step further, and what I figure is, we're organic material, so what we probably are in the grand scheme of things is a single particle of a single atom. And I'm talking about every living thing on Earth. We are a single particle of a single atom in a single drop of sweat off of the balls of some great cosmic beast.
Well, I keep thinking that as progressives, we are bringing knives to gunfights.
Oh, we're expert at that, Richard.
You know, and fighting among each other, and you know,
and it's what I talk about when I talk about the sparkle fart propelled unicorn cavalry purity patrol. That's what I'm talking about. We spend more time excoriating the lack of ideological purity of those on our own side, as opposed to looking at the manifest evil of those on the other.
Right. And I keep thinking that, you know, people like George Lakoff may have their fingers on something, that the gunfight here is emotional. You know, it's gut level stuff. We're not going to convince my neighbor across the street, for instance, to suddenly become a Democrat. It's not going to happen.
Even if, and this is true, even if his father, his grandfather, his great-grandfather, and his great-great-grandfather were all Democrats.
And he's a smart man. He's intelligent. Just not about this.
There are different kinds of intelligence.
Indeed.
I cannot begin to do the work that my absolutely brilliant auto mechanic does. But he has the political acumen of a kumquat.
Right. My neighbor's daughter, I don't know if I mentioned this last time. My neighbor's daughter is actually a journalist. And, you know, she's been to J school, right? And she has worked for a fair amount of time for a couple of papers in these parts. And he talks to me sometimes about fake news. Now, should I tell him that that's what Hitler did?
No. The minute you play the Hitler card, it's over.
Okay, what do you think?
When he says it's fake news, really the only thing you can do and hope that he's not carrying his gun is to challenge. What makes it fake? How is it fake? You know, or say, you know, that's become as meaningless a phrase as new and improved. Don't ever tell me something's new and improved without telling me how it's new and what improves it.
Now, you're saying this is the logic that I should use with it?
And it's not even necessarily logic. If you're really going to reach him, and that's the problem here. You're probably not going to, Richard.
I don't think I can, to be honest. I mean, I've made him a personal project, but I don't think I'm going to succeed at it. And I'm talking, you know, I went and had my shoulder surgery at a hospital in another city. And while I was there, I grabbed a magazine from a stack of magazines, and I opened it up, and there was his daughter's picture, because she edited that magazine. You know, and the thought crossed my mind is that when Donald Trump says the press is the enemy of the people, and he buys into that, Trump is talking about his own daughter.
Sure.
Does he get it?
No, he no. No, just no. The answer is no. And so, I mean, I spend a lot of time thinking about, because I desperately want to see the South come into its own.
Indeed.
3 years ago, Agnes and I were driving in the South, and we were talking about 2 years ago how, you know, the South desperately needs Reconstruction 2.0. And actually finish the job this time. But as any good politician has already demonstrated, you can't reach people with appeals to their reason. It does not work.
Exactly.
Socrates spent a lifetime appealing to reason, and for his trouble, he got a cup of hemlock and allegations that he was corrupting the youth.
Well, I think that the right wing knows how to do psychology. They have psychologists working for them.
Sure, it's not that they. It's not just that they understand psychology. They understand that they're dealing with a target audience who must be motivated. And Lakoff has talked about this. They must be motivated by their hearts.
So how are we going to do it?
Well, first we have to want to. And Biden was doing some of it in the debates, like when he would say, How many people, you know, how many families will sit down to how many Thanksgiving dinners and there will be an empty chair at the table? That's visceral. That grabs you by the guts. And
I
you,
like that.
And,
yeah.
and you get close to being willing to weep for that empty chair. It works the same magic that Dickens does when the ghost of Christmas Yet to Come shows Scrooge the empty chair by the fireplace in the Cratchit house because Tiny Tim is fucking dead.
Yeah.
To use a more modern metaphor, I've mentioned that Agnes and I are enjoying the hell out of the Mandalorian. It's a Star Wars fable, but it's done on the same. You know, if you could bring Sophocles back from the great beyond and sit him down and get him over the shock of watching TV real quick and show him the Mandalorian, he'd sit there and start babbling in ancient Greek, saying, "Oh, I recognize this. Yes, absolutely." Or Aristotle having written the Poetics. Oh, that just proves my point. Because it's not interested. It's a complete divorce from reality. You know, let's bring back Samuel Taylor Coleridge from the great beyond too. And let's sit him down and say, "Well, yes, of course, this is exactly what I was talking about when I wrote about the willing suspension of disbelief. Really? A little tiny hairy green thing with pointy hairy ears and it can't even speak and your entire nation is positively besotted with it? It doesn't even have lines. The most it can do is gurgle. But you've all willingly suspended disbelief and you've invested in this character."
Yes.
And so, that's what people respond to. You know, there's 100 lessons in Oedipus and Oedipus at Colonus. But if you just walked somebody out onto the stage to explain the lessons in Oedipus, nobody's going to sit there. Everybody's going to fall asleep.
Yeah.
On the other hand, if you show it happening to human beings and people willingly suspend disbelief and they invest themselves in the characters, you know, watching Oedipus in ancient Athens was the equivalent to going to the movies and seeing Night of the Living Dead. You're terrified, you're shocked, you're horrified because it's dealing with themes you can understand. But you're safely removed from it, and yet you can still invest and experience the emotional, not the intellectual, power of it. Oh, and I need to thank Darlene in Connecticut. Elie Wiesel is not Night Mother. I was thinking of Kurt Vonnegut with Mother Night. The title is Night, as Darlene points out. Darlene says, "I studied Elie Wiesel's writings prodigiously at the Jesuit university I attended in Fairfield University in Connecticut. Night was the required reading for all students, part of the grueling core curriculum there. He was hands down that university's most revered and celebrated author. Elie Wiesel eventually paid a visit to the university to give a speech there. Sadly, I think it was long after I'd graduated. I'm 100% certain he was treated as royalty. His conclusion, there was no God." And, you know, I find lots of opportunities to disagree with him, but Bill Maher pointed something out in a few programs back. The guy who founded the Seventh-day Adventist Church said the world would end on a specific date in 1844. There are still Seventh-day Adventists.
My doctor is one of them.
The Mormons believe that whether they be the Cheyenne the Apache, the Cherokee, the Choctaw, the Chickasaw, the Delaware, the Haudenosaunee, the Anishinaabe. The Mormons believe that those are all really Jews, or technically members of the lost descendants of the lost tribes of Israel.
And so what's the significance of that?
Well, we absolutely know beyond a shadow of a doubt that they're not, but there's still a Mormon church.
Sure. Well,
so I don't mean to burst your bubble, but I don't think you're going to reach anybody down there. And frankly, with all due respect, your atheist group is a debating society.
It's kind of like in
one of those Star Trek movies when Kirk asks, because apparently God has been discovered and God needs to hitch a ride on the Enterprise, and Kirk keeps asking, what does God need with a starship? You know, if you need a group to, you know, I'd prefer a supper club, as opposed to a debating society.
Me too. I mean, it's not where I live, Bob. It's just, you know, I don't have to have that battle.
Yeah,
it's not who I am. I flunked philosophy in college, you know.
Ouch.
I'm not wired that way.
Well, yeah. we've run over a little bit, but I got to roll out of here. But I want you to know I do so enjoy these conversations. I had a note a bit ago from someone who said, and he's not as familiar with you as some of the longer standing members of the community are. And he said, Richard is beginning to feel more and more like an old friend.
I'm moved. I really am.
And it's true, because that's the beauty of this community. Richard, take care of yourself.
Thank you.
Just, you know, keep working the physical therapy. And remember, do not answer the question, what do you think of Nancy Pelosi? Don't do that.
Don't do that. Well, that's another conversation.
Yeah, that's the right-wing equivalent of, hey, kid, you want a piece of candy? Because it's not going to end well.
Yeah.
Richard, take care,
my friend.
I've got
to go back to this. Okay, thanks, Bob.
Later.
Talk to you later.
Bye now.
Bye.
Been having great conversations like that with Richard for just about as long as the horn has existed. By the way, Darlene pointed out, you picked an ideal time to quit smoking. As I understand it, the coronavirus aerosols travel or are carried on the exhaled smoke from a cigarette. That would absolutely have to be true. Especially, you know, you inhale it, and so it's going to go deep in the lungs and dig around, and then you're going to blow it back out. Darlene said, I was shocked to read this, but that's what the article stated. It seems to stand to reason to me. So, says Darlene, if true, you're saving not only your own life, but the lives of those you hold most dear to your heart. I hope so. I hope so, Darlene. And in an effort to knock down the fundraising, and it's at 440 right now, I had a note from Billable Rick. And it can be handled by anybody who's still tuned in or by the overnight crew. The Thorn in the Side Lightning Strikes Twice twice in December challenge. Let me do that right this time. I'm a professional speaker. The Thorn in the Side Lightning Strikes Twice in December challenge. In an attempt to help remove some of the thorn in your side caused by fundraising, I'd like to make a $30 challenge to be doubled to $60 if met by a Hornedanista. I'm calling this the Lightning Strikes Twice in December challenge to commemorate my second hole-in-one on December 2nd, only 354 days after my first hole-in-one on Friday, December 13th, 2020. or 2019. The goddess of irony was smiling on me yesterday, since while I was in the tee box, I started chatting with my playing partner, John, if it's necessary to have a witness in order to legitimately claim a hole-in-one. Does a tree falling in the forest require somebody to be present to make a sound? Well, the answer is yes to both questions. Don't ask what possessed me to bring up the topic, but we agreed that the witness issue was a moot point because we had a twosome. I then proceeded to tee off, hit a high wedge shot. I knew it was a par three. They most always are hole-in-ones. Hit a high wedge shot, which I thought was short of the hole, but turned away, and then John looked up and yelled, getting my attention. I then watched the ball roll back into the hole for the last 3 feet. It landed 8 feet above the hole for an ace. This challenge can run through tomorrow, since I've been busy billing stuff all afternoon, and I'm just now sending this email. Hopefully this challenge will allow listeners to the program to help you make a few fundraising birdies or even aces. Oh. Nice analogy. Thank you, Billable. And congratulations. I've never had one. The closest I ever got was a par three in Wheeling. And it was similar. It hopped twice and ran up to the hole and stopped 2 inches short. And yes, I at least got the birdie. I didn't three putt it, but that was as close as I ever got. It's something special. So congratulations, Billable Rick. Congratulations indeed. And so if somebody kicks in $30, then Billable Rick will match it and then add 30 more. And that would get us down to 380, which would be fantastic, leaving us at 680 to finish the week. So thank you, Billable Rick. Thank you. Steve in New York says, Darlene and cancer sticks. Now I know I'm glad I avoid walking near smokers blowing out their exhaust. Well, it's a good example. I'm glad Darlene brought it up because it visualizes for us. It's kind of like what I was talking to with Richard about the emotional quality of theater versus, say, the simply talking about it or describing it. You know, the great writers will tell you, show, don't tell, when it comes to writing. And it's a similar prospect. When, I mean, and there's even an experiment. You know, if you could do it from 30 feet away, maybe. If you've got a friend who's a smoker, say, here's what I want you to do. First, I want you to take a puff of a cigarette, inhale it, and blow it out. No mask, no nothing. And you'll see this great effluviant cloud of smoke. Then ask him to take a puff of the cigarette and put the mask on and exhale again. You're still going to see smoke, but it's going to be dramatically reduced. And that is a stark visualization of what we're talking about. And maybe, you know, maybe that would reach a maggot or two, a mask hole, a COVIDiot. I don't, probably not. But we've reached a point in this country where we've got to try anything. I saw some breaking news earlier indicated that Joe Biden, upon his inauguration, will ask America to wear a mask for his first 100 days. That via Bloomberg. Biden says he will ask all Americans to wear a mask during his first 100 days in office and require face coverings in federal buildings. Well, he's doing what he can do with an executive order because, of course, we have too many mask holes and COVIDiots, particularly in the Senate of the United States. I wasn't dissing The Mandalorian. I love it too. I'm in trouble now. Damn it. Thank you, Steve, in New York. Billable Rick's challenge has been met. And so that'll take us, like I said, that'll take us down to 380. And anybody who wants to jump in on the overnight crew and get us down a little bit further will make tomorrow's community-made miracle perhaps a little more likely. Thanks, Steve. And my our best wishes go out to our good friend Trey in Kentucky, Stan. I got a note from Trey saying, "Well, Bob, I'm in quarantine for 14 days because my manager refused to wear a mask. Merca." So far, Trey says, and I hope it stays that way, no symptoms. But yeah, that's right. My manager has had the virus since Monday and just now told everyone as a sort of postscript to it all. Trey adds, she was a chin strap mask person. Of course. They're so fetching, those masks worn as chin straps. Thank you, Haley. Thank you so much. Haley says, congrats on the 80-day smoke-free, Bob. I do appreciate it. Monday will be what? 84. 84 days. Because I started on Monday. So thanks, everybody. Thanks for all that you do to keep the program on the air. Thanks for your kind subscriptions via Patreon and PayPal. We always need new subscribers. If you'd like to jump in, it's just a matter of clicking the box there at the main page at headon.live. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Sparky and Steve in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Brand new Malloy on the way, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 6 p.m. Pacific. Best place to listen to the first run of Malloy is at headon.live. And it's free and easy. Thanks, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. 20 plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. And, you know, Coal River Mountain Watch really did raise hell about an expired permit and really did get told that, well, a coal company always gets a do-over. But they don't quit. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Please stay safe. The best way to stay safe is to stay home, but lots of people can't for a variety of reasons. So if you must be out, wear your mask. Wear your gloves. Wash your hands. Use your hand sanitizer. Hell, use your hand sanitizer even on your gloves. Carry some with you everywhere you go. Maintain your social distance 10 feet if you're around other people wearing masks. Don't be within a country mile of someone not. And frankly, it's okay if you despise people who don't wear them. It ain't illegal to think. And of course, if somebody is around you talking about how 120% of the people in the poll book voted, and did you guys fix the poll books? Avoid that person like the plague. Because she is. Later, y'all.